using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 6th of December, year of our Lord, 2021, day 634 of the emergency. And today we're going to talk about what has happened since I've been gone. I want to thank Tony Arterburn for doing a great job. I have more to say about that. But when I look at what has happened with the Omicron, as I cut a short video to introduce and thank Tony about it, it was really kind of dark humor. I could not help but laugh at the absurdity of the Omicron variant. Oh, my. Look at what has happened in the last week with that. But on a more serious vein, and also playing into that, is the rise of the FEMA camps and the moves to mandate everyone get vaccines. They're moving towards that, folks. And we're going to take a look at the military mandates as well, because in my mind, those two things are tied very closely together. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, I want to thank Tony because he did a fantastic job. I had a lot of feedback from people. Telling me how much they enjoyed the show. I did not hear as much of it as many of you did because I was taking the week off. I took a holiday from social media and a lot of other things. I did look at some of the transcripts, and Tony covered the bases, had some great guests. Many people commented on it. Tony did a fantastic job. David, hope you and your family had an enjoyable break, said NMG Sports. On Twitter, Tony is the man. Great job, sir. I would second that. This was sent to me, and I've got a lot of these. I'm still catching up on mail. So many people sent mail. That was another thing I kind of took a break from. But welcome back. Tony did a great job, and the children played nicely for the most part on DLive. So did you find a parallel society while you were traveling? Well, in my mind, I guess. It's kind of going back to that area. It's kind of like the Twilight Zone episode where the guy gets on the train going to Willoughby. It turns out he's dead. So that didn't happen yet. But it's kind of whenever I go back to that area, it was the last place I went to before I came to Texas to work for InfoWars. And it was the place that I would return to more than any other after when I would have a vacation. It's a place that I always used to vacation as a child. My family from Florida would go up there to escape the heat, and that's basically what I'm trying to do as well, as escape the heat before it happens this next summer again. But yeah, it does have a lot of nostalgia for me as well as being closer to family. But it was great what I saw of the transcripts. I loved what Tony said about Omicron is the Orson Welles War of the Worlds variant, because that's exactly what they were doing. And it was pretty obvious from the very beginning of that, wasn't it? It truly was. And I had a listener who sent this in and said, you realize that Omicron is an anagram, meaning you just take the same word letters and you switch them around, right? Exactly the same number of letters, you just change the order. Omicron is an anagram of, have you got it yet? Moronic. That's what this was. The whole thing was moronic. But it showed a very dark underbelly of the government, of the media, of people like Jim Cramer. And I know that Tony talked about that, but I've got to play you the clip of this thing that he did a few days after his anger had subsided about the stock market. And we know how they are fingering the people who are unvaccinated. It is a campaign of vilification, of dehumanization, to say these people are a threat to our lives. They're a threat, more importantly, to the profits in the stock portfolio, people like Jim Cramer. And so we must be eliminated or at least imprisoned. And let me tell you, that is where this is headed. And so we're going to talk about the FEMA camps. We're going to talk about the military mandates. Where are we currently? And I think this is very germane, no pun intended, to the anthrax mandates that they had in the military about 20 years ago. And so we're going to revisit that, see what happened at that time. How did the Pentagon react? How did some commanding officers react to that? What happened in the aftermath of that? Some of the people who left, what were the health implications of that for the people who complied? So we're going to get to that as well. And Roe v. Wade, very big developments in Roe v. Wade. Very interesting what is happening with that. But I want to begin with the Omicron, the oh my.
I'm afraid.
Don't be afraid.
No, be afraid. Be very afraid.
Yeah, it was kind of like some schlocky B-movie, right? This whole thing was like a B-movie. So he had all the pronouncements. Omicron is extremely mild, says the doctor actually discovered it. They've got a lot of mutations in it. Well, we should be concerned about that, you know, just like Goldberg, I got Bloomberg on my mind, who had the hair growing out of his back, right? It was a fly hair, you know. It was kind of a original DNA modification. It was a trans issue, transformation as he's being transported. These numerous mutations, they say, destabilize the virus. That's what some of them said. As many of them have pointed out, if you have something that is extremely contagious, then typically, and this is the problem that Fauci and Francis Collins and the people at the NIH have been working on to try to overcome. Typically, if you have something that is extremely fatal, like Ebola, and they compared this ludicrously to Ebola, something that has a case fatality rate of like 60-80% once you catch it. This is nowhere close. None of this stuff has been anywhere close to that. But Ebola does not spread as rapidly, and that's a problem for them. They've got to keep working on that. That's what the gain of function is about. Let's make it more lethal and more easily spread, because these two things kind of work against each other. If you kill the people right away, it makes it hard for them to pass it on. So, you know, you have to have a delay in it, or you have to do some other things, and they're going to get that problem solved. But for right now, what they're doing is they're in the cry wolf stage, which will only make the real one that they release eventually a lot more dangerous, because they will have lulled those of us who are looking at this from the sideline and scratching our heads. They will have lulled us into perhaps a case of false security. But for right now, we know what this agenda is. And so as Goldman Sachs looked at it, they said, well, there's a reasonable degree of confidence this mutation is unlikely to be more malicious than the existing vaccines will most likely continue to be effective. Or, as I would phrase it, it's not likely to be more malicious than the vaccines, not by a long shot. So the cases that have occurred so far have all been mild cases, mild to moderate cases, and that's a good sign. Said the people who were there in South Africa. But understand, we're going to isolate an entire country to prove the point, aren't we? And to also remove the narrative that was floating up at that time about why is it, and this was mainstream media talking like an analyst, or I'm sorry, conspiracy theorist, right? If you analyze and question what they have to say, and if you not just fact check it, but if you logic check it, if you check it for consistency, you are considered a conspiracy theorist. And yet the mainstream media was sounding exactly like conspiracy theorists. They were saying, this is baffling. This is a mystery. We can't understand why the people in these third world areas, you know, like North Africa and India, why aren't they dying in droves? Why don't we see all of these heart attacks increasing and blood clots increasing and all the rest of this stuff? And why aren't they experiencing COVID? Because usually the places that are very poor, that have poor health and sanitary conditions, they're struggling with clean water and food, And they have rampant every kind of disease that you can imagine that has been eradicated in the first world. In the third world, the poor countries, they typically get all of these plagues the worst because they're so exposed to it. And yet it didn't happen. And I had people contacting me over a year ago from places like Cambodia saying, well, after the crazy Westerners got out of here, we're all just living our lives and everything's just fine. Not a problem. Don't tell anybody. Oops, I just told you. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to let that slip. It wasn't Cambodia. It must have been some other place. Because he didn't want that kind of craziness to come there. So everybody was talking about that. They had no explanation. The experts are baffled. And so it was very useful for them to change the narrative about Africa. Because, you know, South Africa and Africa, people don't understand the difference between a first world nation and a third world nation, although they're doing their best to turn South Africa into a third world nation, just like they're working on doing that to the United States and Western Europe. It really did get that off of the narrative. And yet, it was persistent that the people in South Africa said, hey, we found this strain, but it's nothing. Come on. Why are you isolating us? And as they started getting on the media, said, well, what we're seeing clinically in South Africa, remember, I'm at the epicenter. That's where I'm practicing. It's extremely mild. So this is kind of maybe an academic thing that they did. And she said, by the way, we haven't admitted anyone to the hospital with a new variant. I spoke to other colleagues of mine, same picture. Let me tell you, the dog that didn't bark, as Sherlock Holmes would say, was the fact that there were no deaths. You better believe that if anybody had died of anything, and if they had died and they said, well, they died with a positive test for this new variant, and that's the other question, right? How do they have a test for this? Do you really believe, as I said with the Delta variant, do you really believe that they're doing a DNA sequencing test on all these things, on all these patients? Absolutely not. I don't believe that for a minute. As a matter of fact, you know, when the Delta craze was, you know, the fear porn of the day, they were telling everyone, it's against the law. We can't tell you what that is. We're gonna test. We'll tell you that it's Delta. And then as they dug into it, the mainstream media even pointed out that they don't have the sequencing tests. They're just assuming that because we know that the Delta variant is rampant, that what you have is a Delta variant. You see the circular logic here? We've been told by experts that Delta is everywhere. Therefore, even though I don't have a test, I know that you've got Delta. I haven't done the test. I don't have the test. It's the same stuff they were telling us about COVID when all this stuff began. And just as you saw with Trump, you got one or two people that test positive, so we're going to lock down the entire country. We're going to put on all kinds of orders. It's the same thing. Same playbook. That's the thing. That's why I was laughing about this. It's the same playbook. And so I said, just do not comply with this. You know what the game is right now. We've got people are waking up all around the world, and they're trying to panic us again. We're coming into winter for the Northern Hemisphere. They're trying to panic everybody. Don't play that game. Don't be conned by them. Remember, a con game is based on confidence. You have to have confidence in the guys who are scamming you. That's why they talk incessantly about Fauci's credentials and how they are unchallengeable, because he's a con man. The whole thing is a con game. And fortunately, it looks like this con is unraveling. New variant hysteria comes from the same institution that popularized lockdowns and previous COVID scares. Which one would that be? Well, that would be the Imperial College of London. So impressive, that title, isn't it? Imperial London, it's a college, except it's Neil Ferguson. And this is the nonsense that was sold by Fauci to Trump. Now, I said at the time that happened, and I pointed out from the very beginning, right away, you had, I think it was Ioannidis at Stanford Institute, who said He's got a, and his model says it doesn't have a curve. I mean, you're talking about we got to flatten the curve. There's no curve in his model, right? He doesn't have Farr's law in there. Going back to 1840, all of these things doesn't matter. Any new disease follows Farr's law with that curve. Instead, it's a straight line. He assumed that every person who got it, and this is an assumption. He doesn't know. I mean, they had no data to support any of this, but he just assumed that it was going to be 2.5 people were going to be infected by every person who got it. They were going to infect 2.5 other people. And those 2.5 other people were going to infect another 2.5 other people each. And so it's going to grow exponentially forever. Never have a curve where it flattens out and declines. Because we're going to forget about natural immunity. Well, that was a big problem. The other part of the problem was discovered by the University of Edinburgh. They said this computer simulation written in Fortran code, like 15,000 lines or whatever, just ridiculous. And you put the same input into it and you get a different answer every time. It's like a random number generator. It's just total garbage from the software. So the model was garbage. The software was garbage. But that was the basis that Fauci and others used to push this through. And I said at the time, you could say at that point in time, maybe Trump had been fooled. Now we know he's a traitor because he's still doing this. He's still the key salesman of this thing years later. The new variant scare campaign originated earlier this week with a Twitter thread from Tom Peacock, appropriately named, a postdoc student in his early 30s who was employed at the Imperial College of London. This is from the dossier. He set the gears in motion through his alarmist interpretation of the variant, describing the new strain as having a, quote, really awful spike mutation profile, unquote. Well, I could say the same thing about the mRNA vaccines. They have a really awful spike mutation profile, don't they? You know, the most dangerous aspect of this is that spike protein. And Moderna, even with their they have to come up with a product name. They call theirs SpikeVax. The SpikeVax. That SpikeVax has a really awful spike mutation profile, actually. So, going back, as they point out in the dossier, March of 2020, the idea that the world needed to, quote, flatten the curve through pseudoscientific lockdowns was spawned by a faulty academic model from Neil Ferguson, an epidemiologist at the Imperial College. When pressed to open source his models, he outright refused. He later resigned in disgrace from the U.S. Government Scientific Advisory Board, something that Fauci has so far not done. Fauci has is, you can't disgrace the guy. He is, he has a ironclad resistance to any shame. He is absolutely shameless. So, as Off Guardian points out, the Omicron variant, or the Oh My variant, the Oh My virus, is it a magic pill, or is it solving the African problem, as I mentioned before? Entirely predictable, as it was completely meaningless, they said. The Omicron variant is more transmissible, but they don't know if it's more dangerous yet, so they're keeping their options open. And we can lock down everybody before we find out what this is even, right? This is why I say, to identify something as, even if you identify a disease, you have to show evidence, don't you, that you've got an epidemic, and then you got to show that epidemic is everywhere before you got a pandemic. And that's why this thing is such a lie, such a lie. It originated in Africa, possibly mutating in an untreated AIDS patient. They threw that in there to scare everybody. Notice that? It has more than double the mutations of Delta. So what? So what? Scientists are concerned that the current vaccines may not be effective against a new strain, and they may need to tweak them. And that means more money, right? Because, how many times can they come back to the well and tell these poor suckers, well, they gave you two vaccines. And that's unprecedented. I mean, that was really an eye-opener at the very beginning of this. Two vaccines? What's that about? What are they up to with this? And then they came back and said, no, and 6 months later, hey, you got to have three. Now you got to have four. Never ending, right? So now we're going to, but those are always, it's always the same vaccine. It doesn't matter. Yeah, we're going to keep doing the same thing over and over again, and we're going to get a different result, right? That's insanity. Scientists expect that the recently approved antiviral drugs, such as Merck's pill, will work as effectively against the new variant. So we don't want to step on the toes of somebody else who's grifting the system and making lots of money. Let's all make money off of this thing. There's enough people to scare right now, enough governments that we can blackmail, that we can all make money. So let's not trash Merck's pill. And then, finally, it's already spreading around the world, and travel bans may be needed to prevent the need for another lockdown. See? That's it. Rinse and repeat. New and improved pandemic. It's got a brand new narrative. Papa's got a brand new bag. How many times will the government and the media run this con game? How many times will they pull the wool over your eyes? And I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the public in general. Last summer, as Off Guardian says, Neil Ferguson attempted to explain away what was going on in Africa by saying the African nations have on average a younger population. I've seen people put this up on Twitter. You know, when they say, well, people were questioning, well, what is this about this baffling situation? People in Africa are not getting sick with this. And so they came out, so it's because they're younger. Well, as Off Guardian points out, here's why they're younger. Because there are diseases endemic to large parts of Africa that are all but wiped out in the Western world. Cholera, typhus, yellow fever, tuberculosis, malaria, access to clean water, access to health care. Very limited. That's why you see, one of the reasons why you see a younger population. They also haven't been as thoroughly sterilized as we have. So that helps. That is not one of the symptoms of our chemical soup and radiation that we're exposed to here in the Western world. But yes, they do have a younger population because on average they're much sicker and have a lower life expectancy. And while it's been nailed into the public mind that being elderly is the biggest risk factor of COVID, that is inaccurate, says Off Guardian. In fact, the biggest risk factor of dying, quote-unquote, of COVID is the fact that you're already dying of something else. You've already got multiple comorbidities. This is what we have seen consistently. We've had 2 weeks of data from Italy before the lockdown that Trump did, showing that the average age was, first week, just slightly over 80, second week, just about 79.5, comorbidities, 2.5, both of these weeks. And yet, the panicked lockdown. And then after that went on and on and on and on and on, we had our own figures, and guess what they showed? Same thing. When we look at the demographic profile of this virus, the very fact that it is skewed to those that are, it doesn't even really show up above late middle age, was it 55 or 60, something like that. And then it starts to go up exponentially. It looks like the actuarial tables. There's also a spike for those who are under 1 year old. But the rest of the people, it's basically flatlining. That is not what you see when you look at the 1918 flu pandemic. It was evenly distributed across all age groups. It did increase a bit for the under 1 year olds and the over 80 year olds. But that is simply because of their general condition. But other than that, it wasn't distributed like this was, where it's almost exclusively over 80. Truth is that any real dangerous respiratory virus would have cut a bloody swath across the entire continent of Africa. That's the truth. And the fact that we have seen it introduced and experienced in India and then immediately stopped once they introduced ivermectin, I've talked about that over and over again. So now we have Omicron in 38 countries, no deaths reported. No deaths reported. But we're going to pretend that this is a deadly pandemic. It's everywhere and everyone is going to die, even though when they say that it was detected in the U.S., and again, I think you can take these things with a grain of salt because are they really doing DNA sequencing on this? We stop and think about how many different ways and tests that they have to run. And I know from watching Fauci and the NIH push flu vaccines for years that they were telling everybody, oh, we got a really bad flu this year. Go get your shot at the drugstore, or with a fill-up or whatever. Actually, while we were traveling, I did see, I use that as a joke, but I actually saw that at one of the places where we're filling up, that they would give you, they'd fill you up with genetic code injection while you get your unleaded gas. So you get your leaded vaccine while you get your leaded gas. But four fully vaxxed people, and the first patient zero in the U.S., was fully vaxxed. But the answer to this, of course, is for us to all be fully vaxxed. The second one was a U.S. Omicron case. Vaccinated adult male who had mild symptoms, and they've been fully resolved, and he's been released. Unlike the rest of the population, which this is now being used to argue that we need to be locked down and eventually locked up in these FEMA camps because that's where it's coming from. So the Washington Post looks at this and they say, well, it could be more infectious due to sharing genetic code with the common cold. Is it the common cold? It looks like the common cold. If it acts like the common cold, maybe it's the common cold. No, Washington Post says that that just means that it's even more dangerous. Because it could have greater transmissibility. Look, you're never going to stop these respiratory viruses. You're never going to stop them. That's the genius of this plant. Bill Gates and Fauci decided that they would come up with something like the common cold. And they could label that a deadly pandemic. And because, we've had the common cold. We've had the flu going around. People die. There's a lot of people who died from the flu every year, for real. Probably not as many as the NIH was trying to tell people, but they were dying from the flu as one of the major causes of death, not as much as we're seeing with heart attacks and cancer. And of course, cancer's gone up because that's elective surgery now. And heart attack has gone up because of the vaccines. But people were dying of flu. That's always been around. And yet, if you label it as COVID, now everybody freaks out because COVID comes with a political agenda to lock people down. Just like Fauci's first rodeo, AIDS, that was a political virus, if it was in fact a virus. Kerry Mullen said he didn't believe that it was a virus. And it was Fauci saying that it was a virus that got everybody freaked out and saying, we need to isolate these people. We need to test them. And maybe it's going to be transmitted by mosquitoes and that type of thing. Everybody started calling him sexist because, this is in the homosexual community. So didn't call him. They called everybody who was concerned about it after he said it was a virus. Well, if it's a virus, could it be transmitted by mosquitoes? Could it be transmitted, like a cold or something? And Kerry Mullis, who invented the PCR test, and he was vilified and he was ostracized because he said, you can't use this test to prove a connection to a virus. They didn't want to hear that. And so it was very politicized. And he never was able to monetize that the way they've been able to monetize this. As CNBC said, the U.S. tightens travel testing requirements, mask mandates, as part of a broader plan to fight COVID. Now, I first looked at that, I saw border plan. No. There is no border plan to fight COVID. As a matter of fact, Biden forgot to close the southern border. This is a virus that can only, it doesn't affect the poor people in India or Africa. They're not dying where they are. And they're fine just to come on in. It's just open up the borders to the U.S. and to, to Europe. Anybody who's coming from a poor country, that's fine. We don't have to worry about that. We don't have to test that. We only have to test for these viruses and these variants and these pandemics. We only have to test on that for the people in first world countries. The people who are coming here legally, who are flying, who bought a ticket on a plane. Oh, you got to look at them. You got to make sure they've got vaccines. You got to make sure they're tested. You got to make sure that they're masked because they're a threat. You know, these people coming in from the third world, we don't have to worry about that at all. And Biden says, we're going to fight this variant with science and speed, not with chaos and confusion. Well, we've heard that before, haven't we? Science and warp speed. Except what we got was chaos and confusion. Confusion from experts telling us something different all the time. And they have created absolute total chaos. Biden had said when he was running for office in March of 2020, March the 12th, before the national emergency, right? Before Trump
emergency.
Said before that happened.
Okay.
Before Trump told us that. Okay. Biden, on the day before, March the 12th, it was Friday the 13th, March the 13th, 2020. And Biden tweeted this out. He said, a wall will not stop the coronavirus. Banning all travel from Europe or any other part of the world will not stop it. This disease could impact every nation, any person on the planet, and we need a plan to combat it. Now, you have Brit Hume. That was then. This is now. This is last week, actually, when this thing first started going around. Brit Hume says, well, this was Biden on what he called the African ban last year. Now he's imposed one himself. He said, in February the 1st last year, he said Trump further diminished the U.S. in the eyes of this world by expanding his travel ban. This new African ban, quote unquote, that's what Biden called it, is designed to make it harder for black and brown people to immigrate to the United States. It's a disgrace and we cannot let it succeed. As a matter of fact, when we really did have Ebola come to town, when it came to Texas, what was that, 2014, 15? And you had Clay Jenkins, the county judge in Texas, that's the highest elected official. And they were telling everybody, don't worry about it. It was racist to be concerned about Ebola. It has a case fatality rate of like 80%. 80% of the people get it going to die. And the guy who brought it in did die. And he infected two nurses who fortunately did not die. But he was an illegal immigrant from Africa. And it was racist, absolutely racist. And so they made a big deal of this. Obama went to town and did a press conference there. They put Rick Perry, the Republican, the governor at the time, they put him down at the end of the table, you know, like in timeout. And he's sitting there with Clay Jenkins, the Dallas judge, sharing the limelight. And of course, Clay Jenkins, when we had the non-pandemic last year, is one who went after Shelley Luther, who had the beauty parlor, self-employed entrepreneur, doing service job, service business, which is the only thing they've left us. They've got to destroy that. So he came after her, threatening her with jail time, threatening her with big fines. The same guy who said, there's nothing to worry about with Ebola when Ebola came down. He said, go to your football games. We got a football game coming up between Houston and Dallas. Go to that. We got dozens of hospitals. We got thousands of doctors and nurses. We can handle this, Ebola. Oh, but no. We got to shut everything down. We got to take people's businesses, destroy their lives when this comes to town a year ago. And so, yeah, there's just one problem with all this purported concern from Biden about the variant and tune changing. He hasn't said a thing about wide open borders. In fact, this year has seen a record 1.6 million illegal border crossers come in, and they're not being tested for anything. It's just another example of the fact that, you know, this hypocrisy, the science, remember the science? We're going to go with the science on this. They don't believe it themselves. If they were really worried about this, they'd be testing people at the border. And they're not. This is simply a tactic to take over things. This whole thing, while I've been gone for this week, this is a variant that's come through like a flash in the pan. And by the end of the week, it was...
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Yeah, it's like Animaniacs, right? Yeah, be afraid. They're kind of exhausted, and we're kind of tired of hearing this same song and dance too, aren't we? I mean, how many times? Again, it's pretty well makes a mockery The vaccine mandate for legal border crossers coming in January. Now, the shutdown of legal flights from Africa. So the WHO's warning that the new virus variant would pose a very high risk at the beginning of this because, you know, they got to do something for all that money that Bill Gates is giving them. And then there's this new organization that popped up. And the World Medical Association, which I'd not heard of before, there's so many of these little bureaucracies all clamoring really for a place at the table. And that's what this is really about. The chair of the World Medical Association demands national lockdowns, demands compulsory jabs, demands that we fear this COVID variant just as we do Ebola. This was nothing other than a cry for money, for relevance, to say, hey, look at me, I can shill for you. That's really what this is all about. This guy's name is Montgomery, and he says, the new South African variant is a good example of this. We don't know yet anything about its dangerousness. That's what he said, its dangerousness. But it seems to be spreading rapidly. My greatest concern is that it could lead to a variant that is as infectious as Delta and as dangerous as Ebola. So let's go with his fear-mongering fantasies. Well, as Zero Hedge points out, his fear-mongering comes as South Africa's medical chief described Omicron, or the moronic variant, as a storm in a teacup, adding that he had only detected very mild cases so far. But that doesn't stop the big pharmaceutical companies. As a matter of fact, it was rightly perceived by them as a business opportunity. So you had Moderna's CEO saying, you know, these vaccines we've got now, they just won't work for Omicron. Now, how does he know that? How does he know that? They've identified one or two cases. They haven't done any tests or any studies. Oh, that's right. We didn't do any tests or studies for the other vaccine. Still haven't, by the way. Still haven't done it. It's untested. You know, we would be at about the point, well, we wouldn't really even be finished with phase one testing if they would have done this legitimately. And there's three phases. That's why Fauci said, you know, how do we get from this situation, at the panel, the guy asking me says, how do we get from the situation where we're going to take a decade to test a drug? And how do we get from that to a situation where we say, here's this new vaccine, everybody in the world's got to take it? And Fauci says, well, we got to do it from the inside. We got to do it with disruption. And we got to do it iteratively. In other words, incrementally. And he said that in October 2019. You see, these guys have to. It's like a thing with them. They've got to tell you what they're doing. It's like a compulsion with them. That's why it's kind of interesting. You always see this, you know, in the movies. The bad guy, you know, the James Bond villain who's going to blow up the world, or you know, whatever, some superhero movie where you got, they always have to have and you know, you look at it and it's a plot device. It allows them to lay everything out for people in case it isn't painfully obvious by that point at the end of the movie. But they lay out all their motivations and where it's going to go, and they tell it all to the protagonist, right? The superhero who's going to save the world. And then he breaks out of his bonds, you know, he's tied up listening to all this. He breaks out of his bonds and he stops it, except right now, nobody has stopped this. Where is our superhero? Where's my super suit? Right? So we need Frozone to come back here. Anyway, antibody cocktails are also going to need modification. We got to do a new round of everything. So we're going to tweak it, going to repatent it, and we're going to reapply it and resell it to everybody. All the governments got to get this. There you go. That's right. This Goldfinger, who is explaining to James Bond what he's doing as he slowly has for effect the laser, you know, coming up between his legs. It's going to slice him in half, presumably. FDA also jumped in on this. They expedited the review process for the vaccines and for the drugs because, you know, there's only a limited amount of time before that laser hits our crotch. And so we have to do something about this very quickly. But I think the most disgusting thing that I saw out of all of this was Jim Cramer. You know, Jim Cramer, when he started demanding that Biden impose the military-enforced vaccine mandates for all Americans, this is one of the most disgusting things I have seen. And yet, it just took a couple of days for him to come around after he saw the stock market tanked and everything. Well, stock market tanked because of those anti-vaxxers. We weren't the ones telling everybody to freak out and panic. It was the pro-vaxxers. It was the vax salesmen that panicked everybody. It was the government and the media that panicked everybody. But he blamed the anti-vaxxers. Because we know that he's shilling not just for big pharmaceutical companies, but for the government itself. And so after a couple of days, he got a different perspective. And so, you know, after the panic and the, you know, the wiping out of a lot of stocks and everything, Cramer had an epiphany. Listen to what he had to say.
So what is the right way to approach the Omicron strain? I'm glad you came to me, because I think what I want to do is go clinical. What I've learned to do through this whole scenario is rely on science. And that means relying on Pfizer, which, by the way, stock was down today, seemed attractive to me.
Money.
And Moderna. Now, we heard from Dr. Albert Bourla, CEO of Pfizer, and Stéphane Bancel, CEO of Moderna, this morning on Squawk. I found myself thinking, I sure hope these two people win Time Magazine's Person of the Year, because they're amazing. Bourla reassured me that Pfizer not only has something in the works for Omicron, they also got some antiviral that you can take when you get sick. And if they can pump that thing out by the tens of millions, which I think they can, well, then we're going to be a lot less fearful, a lot more buoyant. As for Bancel, he plans to be the first out of the gate with a vaccine for this strain, just like he was the first out of the gate in 2020, when everyone was dumping stocks left and right. I trust these two gentlemen.
Yeah. Aren't they great? Aren't they great? I mean, he did everything but play that little, you know, the dancing hypodermic needles that Colbert's got, you know. Da-da-da-da-da-da, Moderna, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. He has drawn quite a bit of attention to himself by demanding in a rant on his show, Mad Money, that Biden impose vaccine mandates, something that leaders in Europe are already discussing. He said the federal government needs to require vaccines, including booster shots, for everyone in America by, say, January the 1st. Yeah, let's just pull it out here, right? But you know what his motivation is there. He's looking at this, and it's like, oh, yeah, okay, we can make money off of this. Let me tell you what this guy really is. He's really just a screaming entertainer. That's all he is. That's all. Listen to it in his own words. This is how he starts out his show.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. I'll be one of my friends just trying to make some money. My job is not just to entertain, but to teach and educate.
Yeah, it seems like I remember somebody else that does a lot of screaming, and he says, my job is to educate you, right? You can get a big following if you scream at people, even if you got nothing to say. and that's what this guy is about. He screams, and he sells, and he shills for other people. It's pretty transparent who he's shilling for, isn't it? And it usually is with all these guys, who they're shilling for. So, yeah, we got to require vaccines, you know, from these companies that I've invested in that I really love. He says, it's time to admit that our government has lost the ability or the will to make our people do the right thing. That's not what America is about. America is about government protecting our God-given rights. They don't know what the right thing is. And even if they did know what the right thing is, they don't have the authority to force us to do it. It's just that simple. It's one of the reasons we have the Second Amendment, because it's not just the government that is shooting people up. If they want to come out and start to force vaccinate people, that is a line in the sand. If they want to come out and start putting people in FEMA camps, that is going to be the line in the sand. But anyway, he says nobody wants to be the bad guy. So we've allowed a pastiche of uncoordinated health organizations to dictate an on-again, off-again series of measures that mostly just leave us baffled and confused. Why? Well, because they're not science. And I find it interesting that he say on-again, off-again, on-again, off-again. I said from the very beginning of this, back in March, I said they're going to flip this thing on and off like a light switch. And I had somebody at InfoWars question me. Said, where'd they say that? And I said, you know that's what they're saying. They're not going to say it exactly that literally, but that's what they're going to be doing, and they have been doing that. And even he now understands that that's what they've been doing. Anyway, he finished by slamming all the anti-vaxxers and the Biden administration, insisting that the military needs to be brought in to enforce a new mandate. Well, they're working on that, Cramer. He's just preparing. He's laying the groundwork for this. You've got to purge out the people who have ethical concerns about this. You got to purge out the people who have medical concerns about this. And then, you know, if anybody has a reaction, they get kicked out of the military as well. You're left with a group of people who say, well, I got it, and I haven't noticed anything happening yet. Yeah, it might take, a year for those fly hairs to start popping up on the back of your back or whatever. No, but seriously, a lot of this stuff we usually have seen with these vaccines that they don't show up right away. That's what's so dangerous and unusual about these vaccines. People started dying immediately. We've never had such a clear-cut case of this. You know, when you look at the food allergies that people are suffering from, when you look at the explosion in autism, these are things that rolled out gradually with the increase in vaccines that was brought in by Fauci. They did this because of this. It allows them to have plausible deniability that the vaccines are the cause. And yet when you look at the way these things are attacking the blood, the platelets, when you look at how it's attacking and accumulating in the organs, especially in ovaries and other issues like that, we're going to see these long-term effects. But what's amazing about this is that we've seen so many short-term effects, that we've seen more short-term effects than we have seen with all the other vaccines for 30 years combined long-term effects. But he goes on to say, we haven't centralized the issue to the point where the White House actually seems to take responsibility. Now it's toothless OSHA going back and forth on what's allowed in factories, but nobody with any power saying the frontline workers need to be vaccinated. It's just plain wrong, and most of us are sick of it. Well, let me tell you what we're sick of. We're sick of people like Cramer. We're sick of people who have absolutely no understanding or concern about what Western civilization has learned 1,000 years ago, and what for hundreds of years afterwards they were working to put into our culture and into our education and our collective memory, what real tyranny looks like, and to create checks and balances against that kind of tyranny. All of that has been wiped out. As they're wiping out Western civilization, removing all memory of our history, that is a big part of this, so that they can put us through this tyranny. He says, even as a vocal anti-vax minority is always grabbing the mic, this charade must end. The government must require vaccinations. Not of this group or of that group, not company by company, not in cruise ship or airline by airline, or governor by governor. The buck stops at the White House. He wants a all-powerful central government. That is antithetical to everything that this country was founded on. It's antithetical to the Constitution. It's antithetical to the design of government. Our founders were so concerned about this tendency towards centralization that they divided power between the central government, the states, and the people. And then they further divided the central government into three parts that hopefully would check and balance each other. But that doesn't work anymore. That's not being done in Washington. There are some signs that we're going to have some check and balance work done at the state level. I think it's a very positive thing that DeSantis is talking about spending less money to spend less money than Greg Abbott did with his bonus COVID check from Trump. You know, Abbott dropped in $300 million right off the bat into contact tracing, right off the bat, first thing he bought. And he bought it from a little one-room office thing in Frisco, Texas. And everybody in the press and the media, the Republicans and Democrats, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, what is going on with this? And then they tamped that down. Everybody got quiet about it. It was more money than Greg Abbott spent on his virtue signaling about the wall. I think on that he put up $250 million. And, it was $300 million he put for contact tracing. And so DeSantis is talking about, well, we could fund a National Guard that would be under control of the state of Florida. That's a really good idea. You really need to have that. That's an idea that everybody needs to be implementing. I hope they do it. And I didn't write down the amount. I think it was $200 million that he's talking about. I can't be sure of that. But I know that it was considerably less than what Abbott spent on just contact tracing. That's definitely doable. But see, what Cramer is pushing, what the mainstream media is pushing, hatred and vilification of people who are not vaccinated, and then pushing for centralized control, pushing for military, for mandates, for compulsion, and pushing for prison camps, quite frankly. As one Twitter user, Rose of Dawn, with underscores between the words, wrote, "I don't understand how this position could even be supported concerning vaccines because, number one, they don't prevent you from catching COVID. Number two, they don't stop you from spreading COVID. I can only conclude, then, that it is an excuse for authoritarianism." That's right. But, you know, hey, it was an epic rant. And all we really care about is epic rants, right? Because that's the thing that everybody is entertained by. And that's really what he is all about. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
No, I don't want it. I don't want you, stupid hipster.
Yeah, well, that was the other Cramer with a K. But it works. It works. we need somebody to get in the face of Jim Cramer. Just as much of a doofus. But let's get serious here for a moment. Because as I've said before, if we don't stop this, if we don't, first of all, we have to not comply. We have to do this peacefully. I think that's the key thing. But we need to, I think, as we take back our lives, and I've said this from the very beginning, if people would have just gone about their lives, particularly starting with church, I mean, you would have thought that people who believed that Jesus was their Lord and Savior, you would have thought that they would have put that ahead of a pandemic, ahead of a virus, as Christians have through millennia. But that didn't happen. As a matter of fact, I got an email from Sheriff Hathaway. Said, you need to look at this. It's a video about people in Nazi Germany, Christians who had not bowed to the Führer. And the name of the documentary was God is My Führer, right? I'm not going to bow to this false God. And that's really what we should have done from the very beginning. And if we would have done that, it would have been peaceful, civil disobedience. And it would have exposed the fraud. It would have shown that Fauci has no science, that the emperor has no clothes. And that could have been the end of it. And that's why they came after the churches so much. But we didn't do that. And so as this thing continues to progress, and they are doing it iteratively and disruptively and from the inside, and they're doing it everywhere around the world, I want you to see, as we have various European countries, Germany, Austria, Greece, they're starting to assess fines to people who don't get the vaccine. You know, first it went from carrots. If you get it, you will put you in a lottery, and who knows, maybe you'll win some free tuition. Maybe you win $1 million, or maybe at the very least you'll get a donut or something. And so it's gone from that kind of a situation to, if you don't do it, we're going to take away your freedom. Then if you don't do it, we're going to take away your job. If you don't do it, we're going to take away your freedom, your job, and we're going to hit you with monthly fines. And then if you don't do it, we're going to take away your freedom, your job, hit you with monthly fines, and then we'll lock you up because you're dangerous, filthy scum. That's what Kramer is pushing. And so when we look at what is happening in Australia, this guy, Michael Gunner, in the Northern Territory, he has become the new face of fascism. Listen to what he said about having the military go around and round people up and take them to the camps. And I told you last summer when they were doing, mainstream media was broadcasting, look at this, we got these camps that are being set up and they're really nice and people can stay here for a very long time. And it's like, that isn't raising all kinds of flags with people? What is happening with this? Here he is talking about how they're going to go around and round people up as they did. He's bragging about what we did last night.
We transferred to Alice Springs today, either as positive cases or close contacts. We've already identified 38 close contacts in Binjari, and that number will go up. Those 38 are being transferred now. I contacted the Prime Minister last night. We are grateful for the support of about 20 ADF personnel, as well as army trucks, to assist with the transfer of positive cases and close contacts and to support the communities. We are doing an assessment to see what extra resources we might need from the feds, and the Prime Minister is ready to help further. I thank him and the Australian Government for that. Exposure sites will be updated on the website as the contact tracing continues today. We'll also keep testing and doing vaccinations in Binjari and Rockall.
Yeah, and this is what it looks like. Look at this. These guys are all costumed out. They got like blue disposable lab coats. They're all wearing gloves and masks, and they're putting out packages on the steps of these lepers, these unvaccinated people. And notice all the lines. We'll talk more about that. They got lines between, they got one porch that joins all these different ones, but they got lines between them, and then they got lines of the step, and you better not go over that line. As a matter of fact, I've got to play this Michael Gunner thing again. Because I want you to just take a look at the look in his eyes. And if you're listening to this on a podcast, you can hear it in his voice. We don't need to go back. It's become a popular meme to go back and, what was it? It was that Adolf Hitler movie, The Bunker, or something like that. And everybody has gone to that Hitler rant, right? And then they put their own, it's in German, and they put their own subtitles in English. Well, if this guy was speaking a different language, I guess Germans could pick it up, and they could do it because they don't want to do the Hitler thing. They could pick up Michael Gunner, and they could have him go on this rant that he's got about anti-vaxxers. He's anti-vaxxers. They could do it. The problem is most everybody in Germany speaks English, so I guess it wouldn't work. But they could recaption it, to be any kind of authoritarian dictator. But listen to this guy. Look at the hatred in his eyes. The wild-eyed, wide-open, wild-eyed look, the hatred in his eyes, the hatred in his voice, when he talks about anti-vaxxers. And anti-vaxxers includes anybody that opposes his dictates.
If you are anti-mandate, you are absolutely anti-vax. I don't care what your personal vaccination status is. If you support, champion, give a green light, give comfort to, support anybody who argues against the vaccine, you are an anti-vaxxer, absolutely. Your personal vaccination status is utterly irrelevant. If you campaign against the mandate, if you campaign against people being vaccinated in vulnerable settings, teachers in classrooms, I'll be really clear. At that point in time, people were actually supporting the idea of a teacher being unvaccinated in a remote community classroom. with kids who cannot be vaccinated. I reject that utterly, and I still reject it. And if you are out there in any way, shape, or form campaigning against this mandate, you are absolutely anti-vax. If you say pro-persuasion, stuff it, shove it. We are absolutely going to make sure as many Territorians as possible are vaccinated. That is our best protection against this thing. And if you look at the Doherty modelling, that's only come out since, that says if you double dose 80 in remote communities, 5 and up, I think you'll see our vaccine mandate is absolutely crucial to protecting lives, particularly Aboriginal lives. And I will never back away from supporting vaccines. And anyone out there who comes for the mandate, you are anti-vax.
Sieg Heil. Sieg vaccine, right? Or maybe it should be Hail Hydra. This guy is just beyond the pale. Anybody who wants to talk about persuasion, forget it. You know, you're going to the FEMA camp. And that's what we should call it. And shame on all of these entertainers like Kramer, who will rant and rave about FEMA camps for years and then be quiet about that. I mean, I would think that Alex would want to take credit for that, wouldn't you? See, I told you it's going to be FEMA. Well, no, it was, you know, it was clear that it was coming with Trump. But anyway, this is what it looks like. Haley Hodgkin, 26, said she was seized by the authorities in Australia's Northern Territory and forced to spend 14 days in the region's notorious Howard Springs camp after a friend of hers tested positive. See, she didn't even test. You heard him say, well, we got these many people that have tested positive and we got contacts. This is what's so deadly. These idiots in the UK and other places, you know, they had the pingdemic, which meant that, you know, if you put the stupid thing on your phone and it's going to be constantly looking out and pinging other phones around to see if anybody else has got this app. Oh, there's somebody. Okay. All right. We made a connection here. Then it stores that. And if one of you is foolish enough, and you probably are foolish enough if you put that thing on your phone to go get tested constantly, if one of you goes somewhere and you test positive with these tests, and remember, they just pulled back 2.2 million tests from Australia, just one manufacturer in Australia. Every one of those tests was preloaded to give a false positive, not a single false negative, all false positive. So if you test positive, they got you. And not only that, but that app has recorded who you were in close contact with. And they start telling those people, oh, you got to go into timeout. That was so disruptive to the economy. It was worse than the initial lockdown because they couldn't tell when people were going to go out. It's kind of a randomly pulling people out. And that pingdemic, as they called it, was so destructive that they stopped it. But that's basically what these guys are going off of. You don't have to be sick anymore, right? One person that you've been in contact with briefly, and you are going to be hauled off. Now, how do they know that? They don't have this app necessarily. Well, for quite a while in Australia, they've been putting QR codes up different places, and you have to check in with them when you go into a place. You have to constantly notify them where you are. And that's how they're catching people. And that's what they're then hauling them off using the military. And this guy, Gunner, is just so happy to do it. I mean, I look at him and it's a mixture of disgust, hatred, and humor. Because when he talks, he sounds like Michael Palin. thrash him, Centurion, very waffly. It's like, he, even though he has a speech impediment, and I'm happy to make fun of it, when a person is acting like that, he deserves to be taken down more than a notch or two. But he is a very dangerous individual, even though he has some very amusing personal quirks. Anyway, after a friend of hers tested positive, police reportedly identified her via her scooter number plate. See, the guy also have cameras everywhere. As a close contact, and they sent her to the camp, to the FEMA camp. You know, a federal emergency management camp. Ms. Hodgkin said that though she was tested 3 times during her internment, the tests came up negative every time, and she believes that her sentence was punishment for having lied to investigators. Initially, when they asked if she had done a COVID test, she said she had, when in fact she hadn't. Oh, well, oh, my. as she told Unheard, that's H-E-R-D, who say that they have verified her story with documentation. This led to an extraordinary chain of events, and here's her interview, part of her interview with Unheard, where she lays that out.
I just waited for someone to come and test me. No one came to test me. The next people who rocked up at my house were two other police officers. They blocked my driveway.
These are actually uniformed police officers, normal police officers.
Yeah. So then the police officers blocked my driveway. I walked out and I said, what's going on? Are you guys testing me for COVID? What's happening? They said, no, you're getting taken away and you have no choice. You're going to Howard Springs. You either come with us now and we'll put you in the back of the divvy van, so, or you can have a choice to get a COVID cab. So, of course, I chose the COVID cab because I said, well, if we're to take you, we're going to hand you a $5,000 fine. So, of course, I didn't want that to happen. So I just said, look, I don't consent to this. I don't understand why I can't just self-isolate at home like a lot of other people are doing. And they just said, we've just been told from higher up where to take you, and that's all that there is.
We're just following the orders. We're just following the orders. Citizen, do what we say here. She said, you feel like you're in prison. You feel like you've done something wrong. It's inhumane what they're doing. You are so small, they just overpower you, and you're literally nothing. It's like, you do what we say or you're in trouble. We'll lock you up for longer. Yeah, they were even threatening me that if I was to do this again, quote, we will extend your time in here. Yeah, that's Michael Gunner, the new face of fascism. As a matter of fact, here's a video of what this looks like. I talked before about these people and their COVID costumes, wearing their little disposable gowns, their little cloth masks, their face shields, and going on dropping off the food to the prisoners in this camp. What a shameful charade this has become. Shameful. Here she is talking about what this looks like. And of course, they're being taken as information liberation points. They're being taken from their homes by police, and I would say, and also by military. You heard Michael Gunner bragging about that. And locked up in COVID quarantine camps, threatened with giant fines if they step too far outside their cells. And oh, by the way, if you need some help, we will offer you Valium to help you submit. It's very much like Brave New World, right? Don't give a damn. Take a gram of Soma and just chill out, right? So this is what it looks like there in the camp.
I'll give you a warning, yeah? It's an official warning that you have to stand above and obey the rules while you get, yeah? And that's, we have to go to the rules again. I don't care.
So am I allowed to go to the laundry?
You're allowed to go to the laundry, but you got to wear a mask, yeah?
Yeah, righto. Yeah.
And you definitely can't go up the fencing route. But you're allowed to go to the laundry, yeah? That's always been the case, yeah?
Right, so if I was sitting just here, which is right near the fence, why are these guys in a cabin that's right near the fence? It makes no sense, does it?
Yeah, but you can't leave your balcony to go to the fence to talk to somebody else. That's
not good, yeah? So if I was at that balcony...
So there has to be lines everywhere drawn, yeah?
You can't go to the end where there's nobody anywhere close.
You cannot go to someone else. Where it makes no sense, where it doesn't seem right, that is the line, and that's what the law is. Yeah?
So
there's
we have to draw the line somewhere. And they literally drew it.
There's a law that says
that. Direction, yeah? There's a throw direction, yeah?
The yeah, there's a law, right.
There is it. Area, because it was much more highly infectious.
Highly infectious when all of us people are negative.
So far, the risk is still very high, yeah? While you're here, can we just do that? Otherwise, the next time it's a
$5,000
fine. We don't want to do that.
It's a $5,000 fine if what?
If you breach again.
If I walk out onto that path.
Without your mask on, for no reason, other than the rule.
If I cross that yellow line that I've broken the rule, I will be issued with a $5,000 fine.
That's correct.
Right.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Absolutely amazing. They're going to take you. Don't ever test positive. They grab you because they say, well, you were in close contact with this other person. They put you in there. Even though you continue to test negative, they won't let you out. And if you cross that arbitrary line, even though there's nobody else out, you cross that line, there's nobody anywhere in sight. $5,000 fine. Also, as you heard last week, Tony covered this, three children that were detained, 15, 16, 17. They got tired of this. They had all tested negative repeatedly. They hopped the fence, and it created a manhunt like it was the Great Escape. Got to find these people. They stopped cars everywhere. Be on the lookout. 15, 16, 17, recently hunted down and arrested for fleeing the camp. They had all tested negative, but they had been put into this FEMA camp, because they could do it. Because they had been in contact, presumably, with somebody. Three teenagers arrested by the police. They said, this is what the police said. The health risk to the community was very low. Oh, you bet it was. Why was it low? Well, because it didn't get close to anybody this time, right? It was very low. These people don't have any, they're not sick. They haven't even tested positive. I mean, you got to be careful with these tests. First of all, these tests are not clean. They're not accurate. There's a big concern if these things are preloaded with some toxic stuff. And I've shown you the pictures of how they set the swabs up. With something that's come, you've got cotton swabs, you've had cotton swabs forever. Why not use the cotton swabs? No, they've got a different tip on it. They've got spikes, and those spikes come off, as you've seen. I've shown you in the video. They come off if you rub them across meat. Now, why would they do that? But an even bigger question is, why would they even subject you to this invasive, deep nasal swab in the first place? When the elitists, when the Hollywood elitists and the media elitists went to the Cannes Film Festival in France, they were complaining. They said, this is disgusting. I have to do this test. I have to spit into this thing. And they tested for COVID. Wait a minute. We're not allowed to spit into something to have it test. No, you got to use the swabs. I guess it's easier to preload the swabs to get the effect that you want, right? 2.2 million all false positives coming out of Australia. Just one company, one batch. We're not allowed to spit into something to have their supposed test done on it, where they magnify it by 1.1 trillion times. Just absurd. Everything about this is absurd. We're not allowed to do that. No, instead, we have to subject ourselves to an invasive nasal probe with something that leaves behind bristles that has who knows what in it. It'd be bad enough if it didn't have anything. But it could be preloaded with something as well. Again, you have no idea the technical capability of these people. And we do know that there is no restraint on not only their technical capability, but there is no restraint on their moral issues, their ethical issues. They're technically and morally capable of anything. And you better get that through your head. They are not like you. They don't think like you. They have no restraints on their behavior. They believe that they will not answer to God. They believe that they are God. This is a common flaw of dictators. Anyway, the health risk to the community was very low, but there was absolutely no excuse for the actions of these three this morning. I mean, they're treating these people as if they were murderers. When you stop and look, you talk about chaos. Just stop and look at how our government goes over the top to come after people who have committed no crime, who are not even sick, who haven't tested positive, and locking them up. While they take people like this Waukesha killer, who's got a rap sheet a mile long, who has been a threat to people he knows as well as people he doesn't know, who has a long hit list of racial hatred, and they let him out of jail. But of course, we're going to lock up people who are not vaccinated. And then you have these same district attorneys, the Soros attorneys, who are saying, well, we're not going to hold anybody in jail. So you arrest somebody for assaulting a woman. They let this guy out. His name's Garcia in New York, immediately assaults another one and brags about the fact, yeah, I knew you guys were going to let me out right away. He goes out, immediately does the same crime, assaults a woman. And you look at these gangs that are happening everywhere. I mean, this is sowing chaos where you allow the criminals to run free. You open up the prisons and you allow the criminals to run free while you lock up law-abiding citizens for things that are not crimes. No laws have been violated. These are not laws, unlike what that guy said. There is no law. These are orders under color of law. It's a world of difference. If you issue orders under color of law, you are culpable. These people in these prison camps should go back and see what happened to some of the prison guards at the Nuremberg trials. It's the little guys that are going to hang. The big guys will go free. The little guys are the ones that are going to be the minions, the ones who are doing this for the private armies of these madmen are the ones who are going to be on the hook for this. So they had just tested, these three teens, 15, 16, and 17, had just tested negative the day before. They've been confined to quarantine for being close contacts of a positive case. And they don't even say this person was sick. They just tested positive. The Northern Territory Police Commissioner said officers found the trio on the edge of Palmerston and arrested them after a chase on foot. He said the young people are still being interviewed, but, quote, early indications, unquote, were that they had not had any contact with members of the public. Each of the teens faces a fine of up to $5,024. Their escape set off a police manhunt, which included highway checkpoints. This is just pure tyranny. It housed these things, these prison camps that they built in the Northern Territory, house up to 2,000 people. That's why they're scanning and they're looking for people to put in these prisons and keep them in there. It's surrounded by tall fences, carefully policed against attempts to escape. It's been described as a gold standard of such camps and is being replicated across Australia, quote unquote. Well, you just had three teenagers bust you. You better hope Roger and the guys in the Great Escape don't organize something. Escape recaptured? Escape recaptured? It is my duty to escape. It is my duty to resist. And we have to resist these people every bit as much as Roger and the Great Escape guys resisted their imprisonment. This is a global prison program. Biden announces mandatory quarantines for Americans. You don't think it's going to happen here? Mandatory quarantines for Americans, even the fully vaxxed, and it is going to be punishable by fines and penalties. And this was, last week, the Washington Post saying on Thursday last week, the president is expected to announce extreme testing and quarantining requirements for all travelers in the United States, including fully vaccinated Americans. Now, initially, it's going to begin, or what they go on to talk about in the Washington Post story. And this headline is from Free Thought Project. And I think they got it right, because although he says nothing about grabbing people, he focuses on the travel aspect and he focuses on airplanes, because that's where they have their control right now. They don't have control over the cars. They have control over the airplanes and the airports. But this is how it started in Australia. Remember? It began in Australia. It began, and I remember when it happened very well, last summer. Maybe it was in, because summer is their winter. Maybe it was right after that. They had shut down travel between the states of Australia, and you had a lady who was retired in her 60s and on a pension, and she had desperately wanted to get back home. And so she was the first person that took them up on flying because she didn't know what was ahead. She was the only person on the plane besides the flight crew. And when she landed, she was met by an army of police officers who then took her off to be quarantined in a hotel where she was going to be charged a couple hundred dollars a day with a 2-week stay. And she said, I can't afford that kind of money. I'm on a pension. She said, my home is just right next to the airport. Can't I stay there for 2 weeks? I knew I had to quarantine for 2 weeks, but I thought you'd let me do it in my home. No, you got to do it in the hotel. And she was very upset about that, and rightfully so. But now, this is what Biden is approaching, right? This is his strategy, his tactic, because it's the same plan. They're just rolling this out in a different time frame, depending on what people put up with. They're probing everywhere. They're looking to see what the response is going to be from the population. They're doing it in different ways based on different legal strategies and the different countries and so forth. So Biden says, the Washington Post says, as part of a enhanced winter COVID strategy, Biden is expected to announce that officials require everyone entering the country to be tested one day before boarding flights, regardless of their vaccination status, and require all travelers, including U.S. citizens, to self-quarantine for 7 days. So it's not 2 weeks, it's just 1 week. even if their test results are negative. Oh, see? Same thing. I'm going to put you in a prison, even if you're not positive. You can be double vaxxed and you can test negative, and we're still going to put you in prison for a week if you travel. You really want to travel? As a matter of fact, let me just put this in here as an aside. I had somebody, as I mentioned, you know, people saying, great job by Tony. We love Tony Arterman, by the way. Find him at wisewolf.gold. I wanted to get Tony on because there's so much that's happening economically, and he is a real expert on gold, silver, cryptocurrency. He had a lot of great guests. But this person says, oh, it's great, you know, having Tony there, and, you know, did you find your alternate society? One of the things, we were talking to realtors there, and one of the realtors said, you know, and the week that we were there, the week after Thanksgiving, they said was the slowest week that they'd had since all this COVID stuff started. They said that as they shut down travel everywhere with airplanes and things like that, it's difficult for people to go abroad because all the crazy rules everywhere. So they said it's about, I forget what she said, it's 70 to 75% of the population in the country is within a one-day automobile ride of the Smoky Mountain National Park or there around Gatlinburg. And so she said, you know, we've had, it's just been incredible, really busy here. And nobody's wearing masks. They don't have the servers wearing masks. I mean, I saw a couple of employees who I guess, you know, have been completely and thoroughly brainwashed by people like Jim Cramer wearing face masks. But for the most part, they didn't require it by anybody. They didn't have any signs up. It was everybody's just walking around normally. And so when you look at this, it has really changed people's patterns. But it's a very telling thing to see how different it is than New California, where we live just outside of New California, Austin, Texas. And it's very different to see how people react to that. And it's a very important thing to see. So as he's saying, those who flout the requirement might be subject to fines and to penalties. So, yeah, in a sense, there is an alternate reality that is out there. If you look for it enough, you find some rational people in the more conservative areas, except that these people in the conservative areas are hoping that the Republicans are doing do something to protect their God-given liberties and to defend the Constitution, and that is not the case. LifeSite News points out that the House, the federal House, has passed a bill to fund government vaccination databases with Republican support. Now, remember, I had Sheriff Hathaway on. I replayed it, it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I replayed it for Thanksgiving because he went through a lot of different documents that were very important. And one of them that was very important was the fact that we validated with his document there the fact that they were going to be setting up a database, people reporting who's vaccinated, who isn't, to the CDC. And I had inferred that that was going to be the case based on the CDC documents of August 2020, where they were talking about all the different information that they wanted to, the vaccinators to collect on their victims and report to the CDC within 24 hours or something like that. But they had to report it immediately. And they justified it by saying, well, we have to follow them up and we have to give them a second shot in 30 days. And it has to be the same vaccine. So we need to have all this information, all their contact information, which vaccine they got, which lot they got and so forth. Because, you know, we haven't tested this stuff. So you know, if we find a problem, we want to be able to compare lots and that type of deal, which they're not doing. But then there was one field that was there and it was a box to check and say refused. Now, why do you need that if you're real purpose of doing this is to call somebody back? Well, you don't. And so Sheriff Hathaway pointed out that he got this briefing from the federal government talking about how they were putting this together. And this has been approved now by the House. They voted in a 294 to 130 vote. The House approved the Immunization Infrastructure Modernization Act. You notice how everything is infrastructure? This is an infrastructure, though, of tyranny, because that's the only infrastructure they're worried about. You see, the infrastructure that Booty Gay is putting in everywhere is all set to support smart cities and the Great Reset. It is an infrastructure of tyranny. It makes you part of the Internet of Things. It allows them to control everything, especially your movements and to track your movements. But it allows them to get a stranglehold even on the cars, which they don't have control over right now. But this is called an infrastructure bill because, hey, if you call something infrastructure, you know, just green light it and just run it through. So it's the Immunization Infrastructure Act, $400 million for, quote, an immunization system data modernization and expansion. It specifically taps the CDC and public health departments to put this data into the system. An immunization information system is designed in the bill as a confidential, population-based, computerized database that records immunization doses administered by any health care provider to persons within the geographic area covered by that database. Everything in the surveillance state, as I've pointed out for the longest time, goes back to geospatial intelligence. They want to be able to map you and your activities, your religious beliefs, your political beliefs, your vaccination status, anything else they can think of. They want to identify you with that, and they want to put you on the map. And by doing that, then, they can start to do this kind of contact tracing. They can establish networks. And they can, even if they don't have all of that, they can infer what your political beliefs are, what your religious beliefs are, and everything else by the people that you are in contact with. So everything goes back to geospatial intelligence, the fastest growing part of the intelligence community since the late 1990s. And it is the essence of the UN 2030 agenda, the smart cities. And it is the essence of what the internet was designed to do, to get that information on you, so they can put it together, so they can profile you. The metadata is the most important part of that. And they're adding now to that actual data. And they map it onto the geographic area. Because this is about population control. Control in the physical, military, police state sense. Not in terms of killing people. It's also about that. But it's the other type of population control we're talking about at the moment. Funding for, quote, supporting real-time immunization record data exchange and reporting, and improving secure data collection, transmission, bidirectional exchange, maintenance, and analysis of immunization information. Now, this is called an information, that's called the Immunization Infrastructure Act. You had 130 Republicans who voted against the measure, but you had 80 Republicans who voted for it. And pretty much all the Democrats, not pretty much, all Democrats. So Democrats unanimously. And the Republicans are split 80 in favor of this surveillance system and 130 opposed to it. That's how dire the situation is. And it's why I continue to say there will be no help coming from Washington. The Republicans are useless. Have you seen any of these Republicans, even including people like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, who finally this year began to criticize this tyranny? They were silent while it was being done by a Republican administration. They finally began to criticize it this year. But what they will not do is say, as we have seen some state Republican legislatures do, it's time for us to end this emergency. We don't want to have these emergency powers. The fundamental thing that enables all of this is that emergency declaration. That gives them the presumed power to operate in this medical martial law, and it funds it at the same time. That is the linchpin, and you don't hear any Republicans talking about that. Oh, they'll criticize Fauci, and they'll support the vaccine. That's the other thing. Oh, well, I love the vaccine, you know, but hey, I don't want to mandate it for anybody. That line, I am so sick and tired of hearing that. This is like the people, you always used to hear this from Democrats, the gun-controlled Democrats. Well, I love the Second Amendment, but I got to take your guns. I'm a big supporter of the Constitution. I love the Second Amendment, but, you know, you shouldn't have any guns. These Republicans who are out there saying, well, you know, I'm a big supporter of the vaccine, but, you know, I want you to have freedom of choice. Same thing. Same thing. Why can't people see that? So 130 Republicans who voted against the measure included one of them, Representative Mary Miller of Illinois, who said the bill would serve to enforce Biden's crazy global vaccination vision, unquote, and what she called Orwellian rules for the unvaccinated. She said these records are designed to allow for the sharing of crucial information and maintenance of records. Do we really trust the government to protect our medical records? She asked. It reminds me, these are, I see it everywhere. Meta, you know, the new name for Facebook, right? And for yet another time, you got this creepy android, Mark Zuckerberg, telling people to send me your nude pictures and I'll make sure they don't get out on the internet. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's as absurd as believing that these that these people, I'll protect it, I really will. And of course, they never get hacked, right? Even if he wouldn't give them up. People come in and take stuff like that all the time. And so here you have people who are being told, oh, yeah, trust the government. Yeah, just it'll be private. Don't worry about it. You know, we're going to collect all your vaccination information, your medical records and stuff. Yeah, the bill's authors go, continues Mary Miller, Congresswoman from Illinois. She said the bill's author even bragged in her press release that these systems will help the government remind patients when they're due for a recommended vaccine. See, exactly what they were saying in August of 2020. And I said, yeah, except for that one field, refused. If I refused, you don't need that. But you're going to be sending in these reports on people who have refused. So that's not about a reminder. Identify areas with low vaccination rates so they can call in the military that is now fully on board with the vaccine, right, to cordon off these areas, perhaps. To ensure equitable distribution of vaccines. Oh, yeah. This is clearly, she said, a legislative tool to enforce vaccine mandates and to force their Orwellian rules onto those who do not comply. So this is the beautiful thing about the Second Amendment. I've said many times that what the Second Amendment was designed to be is what we saw in the Cold War between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, both of them armed with more than enough missiles to destroy the other side and create a total hell on earth. And that was a deterrent, mutually assured destruction. The Second Amendment is also a mutually assured destruction deterrent. The only problem is that we now have people running our government who are murdering suicidal psychopaths. And that may not work, but it's there nevertheless. Now, if there's anybody in Washington who has an ounce of sense or self-preservation, they'll understand the real purpose of the Second Amendment is mutually assured destruction. And they'll also understand that they haven't won a single one of these asymmetric wars that we've had one after the other since World War II. A German comedian pushing hate. No, because it comes in the package of comedy, just like you see here in America on late-night television. Same thing. You know, it's just a joke, right? Except there's a lot of political maneuvering, preparation, and hatred wrapped up in that. Anti-vaxxers, said the comedian in Germany, are society's grumbling appendix. She said, right-wingers and anti-vaxxers are the appendix of society, so they can be removed without any issue. She's been accused of rhetoric straight out of the Nazi playbook, because that's exactly what this is. Vilification of a segment of society, isolation, segregation, imprisonment, and then extermination. An appendix is not exactly essential, she said, strictly speaking, for the survival of the whole system. On the contrary, whenever it gets inflamed and cries out, hey, people, I'm still here, it simply gets on everybody's nerves. She said... And I guess this is a reminder of why there's not a lot of German comedians. They're really not very funny, are they? They're just a little bit too authoritarian to be funny. The war on the unvaccinated is a desperate attempt to demonize and to destroy the noncompliant, says a headline from LifeSite News. And with quotes from Schallenberg, the Austrian chancellor, who says, quote, we don't want a fifth wave. And we don't want a sixth and a seventh wave. Yeah, except what about the first, second, third, fourth waves that you, everything that you did has not worked, right? I mean, if you believe there's a pandemic, then why don't you believe these people don't know anything about, that's the thing that is so amazing to me about it. All these people who have bought all the hype and the propaganda and the fear-mongering from the mainstream media and from the government that this is a life-threatening pandemic is going to happen to everybody, and we have to take these extreme measures. When they look at these people who are running the show, even if you buy that aspect of it, you have to look at the people who are running the show and say, they don't have any idea what they're doing. They can't protect us. These vaccines don't protect us. A 6 feet distance, which is just made up, that doesn't protect us. You know, the wearing a handkerchief over my face, that doesn't help. None of this stuff makes any difference. But yeah, he says it's necessary to control the fourth wave. This is another German chancellor. That was Austria. This is the German chancellor. His name is Olaf, by the way. Fittingly, Olaf Scholz. I know nothing. Too many people have not got vaccinated, said Scholz. Making the compulsory is justified to protect us all. He signaled, Scholz did, his personal support for such measures, and he said he was, quote, aware that there were cross-party debates among lawmakers about making the vaccine compulsory. But we're going to, after all, this is Germany. We are into compulsion. The incoming chancellor said he wanted to see 30 million jabs administered to people by Christmas. That's right. Not a lump of coal, but a needle. A needle. If you don't bow the knee and bare the arm, they're going to be coming for you. As Tom Luongo writes, and you'll find it on Zero Hedge, Germany has fallen completely to Davos. Well, that's right. I mean, you know, when you... You can go back and you can tell that comedian. If you're looking for Nazis, you'll find the Nazis at Davos, Klaus Schwab. You'll find the Nazis at Bilderberg, where they did their very first confab, right at the spot where they had 10 years earlier on the anniversary of their last Nazi victory. And they had two key players that organized that at Bilderberg. And there they plotted the Union of Europe and the Euro itself. No, these people are literal Nazis. You want to know what the Fourth Reich looks like? Germany is now in charge of the European Union. And these people want to take this global. Because, you know, it was never just about Europe only for the Nazis. Yeah. You could talk about this as the fourth wave. You could talk about it as the fourth turning. You could talk about it as the fourth industrial revolution. Let me tell you, you want a good analogy of this? It's the Fourth Reich. Globally. That's what's happening. They point out when Tom Luongo says that they've fallen to Davos, they've literally gone down a laundry list of everything that Davos has been demanding and done everything that they wanted. Just like Donald Trump. So unvaccinated Austrians are facing prison time, huge fines, and this stuff for not complying. They're looking at, under the bill in Austria, anybody who refused to attend a scheduled vaccination appointment, they just send it to you. Since this is soft tyranny, instead of showing up and doing what Alan Dershowitz, the pedophile lawyer, suggested, the guy who defended Jeffrey Epstein, and he said, and I would defend the idea, this guy would, he defended and got off one of the most prolific and famous pedophiles, Jeffrey Epstein. And he would defend, and he says he would win, and he probably would because he's a clever lawyer. But Alan Dershowitz said that he would defend the government coming around, going door to door, dragging you out of your house and forcefully sticking the needle in your arm. Now, that's Dershowitz. They're a little bit smarter in Austria. They've done that before, and they realize that they can get further with a soft tyranny. Instead of coming to your house and dragging you out and physically forcing the needle into your arm, what they do is they send you an appointment. Isn't that nice? And they leave it up to you. You know, I mean, this is all about, it's your choice. It's your choice. You can choose to come and get your shot, or what we will do is hit you with fines. And then eventually they'll put you in the prison camp. Yeah. Yeah. Under the bill, anybody who refused to attend a scheduled vaccination appointment would receive an official summons, then, from the local authorities. You missed your appointment. If an individual failed to show up, then they'd be summoned one more time within the next 4 weeks, writes RT. Should the second official request be ignored as well, the person will face a fine of $4,061 or 4 weeks in prison. 4 weeks. If you have already been fined twice for violating the vaccine requirement, then they will increase the fine to $8,000. So wait a minute. They're going to continue to do this, right? They're going to continue to do it with every one of these things. As a matter of fact, we stopped at a hotel, and Karen is always, she's great at human int, human intelligence, as the military, as the intelligence community calls it, right? I'm kind of like, I'm the guy that sits back and does analysis of data. That's the thing I like to do. But she likes to just talk to people. She's friendly. And she always gets people to open up and talk to her, and they don't feel threatened, by a lady talking to them. And so she found out a lot of different things talking to people, various places, got on a first-name basis with all the people in the hotels and stuff. And just one place that we stopped overnight on our drive back, she was talking to the lady who was filling the stuff out, and she says, she made some kind of a comment. It was late at night or something, and she was all behind plexiglass stuff and everything. And Karen said, well, you're safe here, aren't you? She goes, well, I've had two of those shots and a booster, and I'm not getting another one, even though they're telling us to get. I'm done with this stuff. Well, you know, if you're in Germany, that's what she thought they were talking about. You're safe, because she's not worried about crime. She's not worried about being shot and held up. She's worried about the other kind of shot. She's worried about getting shot or thrown out of her job. And so when you look at what these people are pushing on everyone, it is a soft tyranny. And in Germany, what they're saying is, you know, if you pull this once, you'll get a $4,000 fine. And, presumably, if you keep ignoring it, they'll keep upping it, you know. Or it may be that if you ignore the subsequent boosters, then they'll hit you again on that. No one will be forcibly brought to a vaccination center to get jabbed against their will, they said. But they'll be forcibly put behind bars. They'll have the money forcibly taken out of their accounts, as they're doing in Greece, imposing a $114 monthly fine on unvaccinated people over 60. I know Tony covered that last week, but look, you think it's not going to happen in America? Nevada has already laid it out. They've already said, we're going to start putting a surcharge on unvaccinated workers who work for the state of Nevada. They are the first ones to do it here in America. We've seen this happening now in Austria and Germany and Greece, and now in Nevada. A $55 a month surcharge on insurance for people in the public employees benefit program. So they hit you as an employee, $55 a month. And then $175 a month if your spouse, your partner, or any dependents who are 18 and older don't get it. So you get hit by each and every one of them. It's the same as firing you, right? And this is going to be for, as they expand the definition of vaccinated, it's going to apply to all of these. I told you before of a flight attendant who is a listener and said, yeah, they're doing this on the airline, Delta or American, I can't remember which one it was. And said, yeah, we're going to start adding this to your insurance bill. If you're not vaccinated, we're going to start charging you. So, you know, that's happening even before Nevada is doing it. And then you got a Democrat representative, Cleaver, Ward, I'm worried about the Cleaver. Emmanuel Cleaver, Beaver Cleaver, has said the unvaccinated are causing much of the problem with the economy. See, we're the problem. Same thing that Jim Cramer was saying. We're the problem. It's not the people who are running around with their hair on fire saying, we're all going to die. Be afraid. Be very afraid. I just found an Omicron. Oh my variant. It's not them. It's us. It's those of us who are saying there's nothing to worry about. We're the ones who caused the problem with the economy. No, no, no. You look at all this stuff. You understand what this is. You just go back to what happened in World War II with a Nazi occupation, and you just substitute Juden, you substitute for that unvaxxed, and you understand exactly what is happening. And so as a conservative treehouse says, you better think carefully about accepting the concept of vaccine passports. You better understand what you're signing up for. And as I've pointed out, a fireman in Canada started an association to push back against these mandates, against the vaccine passports, and against the mandates for a job. Even though he got it, when he was eligible for it early on, he got both of them. But when they started making it a condition to live your life, he saw that danger. He still hasn't seen, fortunately, he hasn't experienced the medical dangers of this. But he could understand the political issues involved in this. And, of course, I knew the political issues involved in this because I've been watching them do this, some simulations, beginning in 2001 with Dark Winter, going all the way up to 2019 with Event 201. This was the plan. Lock everybody down, rush a vaccine through without approval. Don't worry about it. Everybody died because your lockdown was not draconian enough. Everybody died because you didn't push the vaccine through. So I knew what the plan was, and I knew that the plan was to get an identification, tracking, and control of people through all of that. But anyway, the beta tests, as he points out, are being conducted in various nations, each of them with different perspectives and with different constitutional limitations, based on these pesky, archaic rules and laws that govern freedom, the ones that we put in a millennia ago, going back to Runnymede and everything that's happened since then. The checkpoints are essentially gateways where QR codes are being scanned from the cell phones of the compliant, vaccinated citizen. Yes, comrades, there is an app for that. And, of course, we knew this was coming. And I talked about this for a very long time. This is a video that I did way before I went to InfoWars.
Do you remember watching old World War II movies where the Germans were manning?
What have you done with your papers?
Well, how do we get to the point where you not only have to constantly provide your identity papers, but you have to be x-rayed and sexually molested to travel? Why are only a minority of us bothered by this? How did we lose our freedom and dignity? And how do we get them back? Well, the answer to 1984 is 1776. Colonial Americans would never have tolerated this from a government that, in their view, had been created to protect their God-given rights. But Americans today are very different from Americans in 1776. The difference is the education and conditioning we receive in government schools. In 1948, Orwell wrote 1984, which explores the horrors of an authoritarian government that has taken away freedom and dignity. But that same year, an American, B.F. Skinner, also wrote a novel about a totalitarian government. But Skinner viewed total government control not as a horror to be avoided, but as a goal. His later book on behavioral psychology, Beyond Freedom and Dignity, is required reading in many colleges of education in the area of behavioral psychology.
Now we have to put the world in order. It will be a long and complicated struggle, but we have the unity of a common order and a common knowledge.
There are many different theories about what a perfect society should look like, but all the social engineers agree that the key to accomplishing their vision of utopia is to get control of children at the youngest possible age, separating them from their parents and attaching them to the state. Skinner sought to abolish family, religion, democracy, capitalism, freedom, and dignity in his ideal society.
The new world begins.
Just look at the results. In 1984, the Ministry of Truth was responsible for all education, fine arts, news, one source, one authority for all information, which freed the Ministry of Truth from the concern of actually telling the truth. With the continuing centralization in education, our government is increasingly considered to be the authoritative final arbiter of what goes into textbooks and curriculum. It even influences the choice of textbooks for most private schools and some homeschoolers. At the same time, the schools have been at the forefront of adopting all aspects of the surveillance police state. No tactic is too severe for the Ministry of Love to use in protecting its students. Teddy bears with cameras. Pencil sharpeners with cameras, ties with cameras, cameras everywhere, checkpoints, locker inspections, metal detectors, police, 5,000 in New York City schools alone, constant surveillance, no freedom, no dignity. Our centralized government schools have become a combination of many love and many true. GovSchool is 1984 on training wheels. Textbooks today are constantly updating the past to reinforce the social engineering fad of the day. The founders who valued individual freedom have become unpersons, vanished, written out of the textbooks in favor of contemporary persons who embody political correctness. The students adored the party and everything associated with it. The songs, the banners, the drilling, the yelling of slogans, the worship of Big Brother. It was all sort of a glamorous game to them, systematically turning them into ungovernable little savages. Yet this produced no tendency to rebel against government rules. All their ferocity was turned outward against enemies of the state. How do we answer this Orwellian nightmare? The answer is 1776. There was no Federal Department of Education in 1776. There was no Department of Education even in 1976. America rose to greatness with a population that was educated at home or in small, locally controlled schools under close supervision of the parents. The literacy rate in colonial America without GovSchool was higher than today. 20th century figures that were homeschooled included the Wright brothers, Thomas Edison, Douglas MacArthur, and George Patton. The generation of Americans that defeated the institutionalized fascist followers of Hitler had, on average, 8 years of school. A couple of generations later, and our institutionalized children are in school from age 3 to 22. 19 years, and they're arguably more dependent and definitely more socialist. So how would 1776 look today? For starters, we take back our children from the socialist planners and the social science experimenters. Government control of education is government control of our children. We stop the government control of education by stopping the flow of our money for education going to the government and only a portion coming back to us. We stop the government from defining education by selecting curriculum and textbooks. Government control of education must be abolished for the same reasons we don't have a state church and that we shouldn't have state-run media. You can't have freedom of religion or freedom of speech if you don't have freedom of education.
All right. Sorry, I came back. I had the sound turned down here. I want to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Get into the military mandate updates, and I also want to cover Roe v. Wade as we're coming up here. I just want to say a couple more things about COVID. These are letters from listeners, so a husband and wife, and I won't use their name. They asked me not to. They said, for the past couple of weeks, I've been receiving emails about my order for a COVID-19 home test kit. Right? It's kind of like, oh, citizen, we have scheduled you for your vaccination. You better turn up, right? So these people are getting more and more gradually, iteratively. This is the way they push it. And so, you know, my order for a C-19 home test kit, I haven't done that. And I was convinced, he said, that this was spam, as I never have or ever would order or subject myself to a test whose emergency use authorization will be withdrawn in a little over a month. That's right. They're coming up with a brand new, rebranded, and probably corporately owned by Soros and Gates new testing kit. It's going to test for every kind of thing that you can imagine. And so they can, you know, so we're supposed to believe this is going to have multiple tests involved in it. So I guess we can have, you know, FEMA camps for every kind of illness you can imagine, right? Citizen, you've tested positive for, we'll think of something. Off to the camp you go. Anyway, he says, so I thought it was spam. That is, until two C-19 test kits arrived in my mail. Compliments of Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas. I was both shocked and horrified to see those test kits in my hands in my house. Included was a nice letter telling how for the holidays we can have a free testing party. For ease of mind. Here's something you can harass and ostracize your guests with, right? I'm sorry you failed. Get out of my house. As quickly as I could, I moved them into the trash dumpster for disposal. This appears to be the more of the medical tyranny at work to keep fear levels as high as possible. Yep. And it is a trap. The tests are a trap, a big trap. Stay away from the tests. Stay away from contact tracing. The geospatial intelligence is going to be difficult enough to avoid, but do not comply with tests and contact tracing. He goes on to say, my wife and I are using real C-19 preventative treatments and would never take a presumptive test whose results have a 94% false positivity rate. In fact, if they had a perfect test, we would still not be interested in taking it. My only concern now is whether they will be coming after us because we didn't submit to testing. Well, again, it's going to be a soft tyranny. This is coming from the insurance company, so they'll probably do something with insurance rates eventually, somehow. They'll find a hook into that. It'll be a financial thing. That's why I keep saying the carrots and the sticks, for the most part, have been financial. That's why you cannot, I just don't understand why people cannot understand that this is the way the federal government works. They hand out money to people, and then they pull that money back if you don't do what they say. And that's exactly what happened with Trump, you know, with the executive order, the state of emergency. He handed that money out. Now, if he'd been concerned about our individual liberties, if he'd really cared, right, he wouldn't have kept giving that money to the Democrat governors who were taking away our freedom. He would have done something about it, and he could have done something about it. He could have pulled back that funding. They do it all the time. Look at what's happening with Biden and with DeSantis. In that war, the two of them are, you know, using sticks against people, jurisdictions, school boards, things like that, that are mandating masks or other things. So DeSantis says, well, if you do that, I'm going to fine you. And so then Biden says, well, if you do that, I will give you money from the Department of Education to do that. And so they're dueling with that. Or if you have a situation where they put the mandates on employees to get vaccinated, Biden says, I'll fine you if you don't vaccinate them mandatorily. And then DeSantis says, I'll fine you if you do. So again, in both cases, you see the money being used as both a carrot and as a stick to get the people to do whatever they want. That's always what they want to do. Anyway, it goes on to say, I'm also very concerned about the articles of these laboratories selling these this client DNA to third parties. I've talked about that. Even though we're both members of Mensa and our DNA should be valued, I want control over where it goes and how it may be used. And let me tell you, it's not just going to be used for eugenics. It's going to be used for all types of nefarious things. That is not something that they should have. Anyway, this is also from some listeners and supporters. Just wanted to let you know, we both got COVID and worse, yet we were hospitalized. It attacked my stomach. I was throwing up a diarrhea. My husband attacked his lungs and gave him pneumonia. I passed out 3 times. If it weren't for our daughter, we might have died. I'm writing during this Christmas season because I want to share just how important our loved ones are in our lives. They care more than any medical establishment or doctors or politicians who say they care. As a matter of fact, that's one of the real tragedies of this, folks. The fact that people who get sick, if they're diagnosed as, you know, you're sick, if it's with COVID, we're going to say it's from COVID, but now you're a COVID patient. If you failed the test, we're going to isolate you from your family members. And that's, I think, one of the leading causes of this financially incentivized malpractice that's killed so many people in hospitals. cutting them off from their family, who could normally complain about it if they saw something wasn't right. That's a very, very important thing. And the fact that they have isolated people from their families is both inhumane and it facilitates malpractice because there's no other eyes on what they're doing. And the people who care for them can't see it. It's the same type of thing we're seeing in the schools, isn't it? You don't see what these people are doing in the schools, these strangers. And that's the thing that has been their power to be able to do these types of things. Anyway, she goes on to say, our daughter literally saved our lives with her perception of what was going on. A moment later, and we could have both have died. Passing out is scary for those watching. Pneumonia can be very dangerous. As my husband's lungs were in such bad shape, we were in the hospital at the same time. And we were checked out after 4 days with oxygen for my husband, but now we have natural immunity. So, as we watched It's a Wonderful Life, we are blessed with such a daughter and with so many friends. COVID is real. It can be deadly. We're in our later 60s, but we survived thanks to the loving care of our daughter. God bless you and all your listeners because we know they care too. Well, we're very happy to hear that happened. And of course, let me just say that my concern about what is real with this is not that people are getting really sick, but how this is being diagnosed. And if we can trust that, and if we can trust it because of the logical inconsistencies and because of the agenda and the way that this is being used and for all the malicious actions, both medical and political, that have been assigned with this, that is what I have the issue with. And yes, a lot of people have gotten sick. As a matter of fact, this last year, I didn't know anybody in 2020 that got sick, but I've known between a half dozen and a dozen people that have gotten sick this year. I really think that it is the vaccine. I think that is the true bioweapon. This is from Joel Hirshhorn, and just a quick cover letter out to people who I've had him on the show many times. Excellent researcher. He's a physician who is kind of retired. He has excellent credentials, and quite frankly, he doesn't care anymore about pleasing the medical establishment. He only cares about finding out what the truth is. And so you get it straight and unvarnished from Dr. Joel Hirshhorn. His pandemic blunder book and newsletter, he said, vitamin D, he said the government should have promoted vitamin D to combat this. He said there seems to be an endless refusal by the public health establishment to fight the pandemic with the best science-based tools. Instead, they keep pushing vaccines. They have only one tool. And just as people say, if the only tool you've got is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Well, they only have one. Only one solution is allowed. You cannot do anything from a natural health standpoint. You can't do anything that's preventive. You can't do anything that's therapeutic. Nothing is allowed other than the vaccines. You must do that. Oh, and if you get in the hospital, we'll put you on a ventilator. We'll give you remdesivir. All of these things have proven to be ineffective. But that's what they're pushing. And it's especially the vaccine. I mean, underlying all of this, you understand the fear and the disinformation campaign, that is essential, but that is the foundation of all this stuff. But the essential tool that is bought and paid for by the money, it always does go back to the money, but the tool that they're using, what they bought with the money is the vaccine. The vaccine is the tool. The vaccine is the hammer, and everything looks like a nail. And so it all comes back to the vaccine. Anyway, he goes on to say, great German research has provided unequivocal medical evidence that the government should be strongly advocating two actions. Number one, take vitamin D supplements. And number two, have your blood tested for vitamin D. He says the title for this October 2021 journal article says it all. Quote, COVID-19 mortality risk correlates inversely with vitamin D3 status, and a mortality rate close to zero could theoretically be achieved at 50 nanograms per milliliter of blood. Results in a systematic review and a meta-analysis. That is the title, by the way. It's not the opening paragraph. That's the title. But it says it all in the title, as he said. In other words, there's clear evidence that the lower your vitamin D level is, the greater your risk of dying from COVID infection. Moreover, the data clearly show that you need blood level of at least 50 nanograms per milliliter. Now, when I was at InfoWars, they have a supplement, vitamin D3, and I talked about that. I said, look at this. You've got both a former head of the CDC as well as somebody who's currently at the NIH. They've both gone on record with us from the very beginning. They said, look, vitamin D isn't going to cure any virus that's coming here, but what it does is it boosts your immune system. Oh, you mean at that time, 634 days ago, they were talking about how your immune system has to be essential? Well, of course, that's what this all amounts to. The vaccines, in theory, are supposed to be training your immune system so that you don't get sick or, you know, or die. And so it's all about the immune system. That's why this whole thing about natural immunity just isn't any good. You got to have the vaccine. Well, all the vaccine does is train your immune system. And if you got problems with your immune system, you got problems. And what they found is, they knew this early on as well. They knew it beforehand. They said, whenever you have people who have immune system disorders, they typically have a vitamin D3 deficiency. And if you supplement with vitamin D3, it helps to ameliorate the symptoms. And same thing is going to be true with this. Whatever it is, it's going to help. You know, in the same way that you could say, well, you know, how do we fight a pandemic? Well, you know, it will help to ameliorate the pandemic if we have a fully functioning society. If you can get food and you can get medicine, you have transportation, all these things. But if you lock everything down, it's going to make everything worse. Same type of thing medically. If you have vitamin D3, if you're low level of vitamin D3, you are susceptible to all kinds of issues. Not just this, you know, the only disease that anybody wants to talk about anymore. And so that is a fundamental thing. But of course, you talk about that. You're just hawking this product. Well, I'm not hawking any products now. I don't sell vitamin D, and so I'm telling you the advice is still the same. And they subsequently found out even before this. Now they've got a particular level, and you only know what that level is if you get a blood test. But they now have quantized it down with this German study, says Dr. Joel Hirschhorn. They now have a quantity there, level. So this is where your blood needs to be. Well, you don't know what that is unless you get the blood test. One last one here I want to mention, and this is kind of a housekeeping issue. This is from Ty. I appreciate this, Ty. He says, just want to let you know, or thank you, for resolving the Podbean issue. It's been working great again. I had switched to Player FM before you even suggested the other option, and that did work fine, but I preferred the Podbean layout. At first, I assumed Podbean was sabotaging your show, so I'm glad that wasn't the case. I also hope you didn't lose any revenue from fixing the issue. Enjoy your much-deserved vacation. Thanks for the fight and so forth. And I just want to say this about what's going on with Podbean. So we have the podcast, which I know most people listen through the podcast. And the same podcast goes out with two different names. There is The David Knight Show, which goes to everything except for Spotify. Spotify has blocked that. And Spotify has blocked both of the podcasts. They won't give me a reason. It's like PayPal and Venmo and these other people. He's like, yeah, I know what the reason is. You don't have to tell me. Anyway, especially, you know, when they don't tell you the reason, then you know what the reason is. You know, it's illegitimate. You know, it's government-directed, and you're criticizing the wrong people and the wrong policies, and that's not allowed in common current-day America. So they don't have to give me an explanation. That's enough of an explanation. But getting back to the two podcasts, so there's two podcasts, The David Knight Show and The Real David Knight Show. Why do we have those two different podcasts? Well, because we couldn't get the podcast control for 3 months for The David Knight Show. So we set up The Real David Knight Show on Podbean. And that's all we had for the first 3 months. And then we got the other one activated. And so we continued to push it out in those other places because we had a lot of people who didn't know that we're continuing on with the show. And so we wanted to continue to push it out to those people. Now, what we've been able to do is, and we hosted them on different sites. So one of them is hosted on Spreaker. The other one is hosted on Podbean. So I tried putting a little, tried to monetize them with ads. And it really didn't work on Podbean. First of all, they only monetize what you play on the player and not what is sent out to people. And then it created playback issues when people were watching it on Podbean. And so the playback issues started when we did the monetization on Podbean, and they stopped when we stopped the monetization. So we're in the process of transitioning everything over to Spreaker, where we can do some monetization. And we'll still be pushing out wherever you're listening, because both of these things get pushed out to iTunes and to Google and to iHeart and to all these different places, Player FM, so many of them. They all get sent out to all the same places, so you should see the podcast in those places. The only people that will be affected by this change are the people like Ty who are playing it on the Podbean app. And we're going to continue to put that up there for another month before we shut that down. And I'll keep reminding you about that. But eventually what we're going to do is switch it over to Spreaker, so there'll be an app there, or you'll be able to listen to it on iTunes, iHeart, Google, all these other places, either one of those. And so that's a change that is going to be coming up, and we'll keep reminding you about that. Let's take a quick look at the military mandates. And I want to look at this because we're approaching, and actually we've passed the deadline for some of the branches of the military, and some of them are still coming up. But I also want to look at this in light of the what happened with the anthrax vaccines and with that mandate about 20 years ago. But before I do, let me just, I've got a couple of letters here. One from some listeners who said, thank you for the letter, because I took, as you may recall, we had so many people as we're getting close to this deadline asking us for the example letter. We had an excellent letter that was sent to us by an individual, and I've got an update from him here about his situation in the military. I'm not going to mention his name, even his first name, because I don't want to get him in any trouble. But it was an excellent example. I had a couple of them that put up, but I had a lot of people that had used it and found it to be effective. So we were sending them out to people, but it got to be so many people that were asking about it that we put it up on thedavidknightshow.com. And so you can download it from there. And you can also see where you can follow the podcast and how you can support us financially and where you can find the video broadcast, where we also put not just the full show, but we take out cuts each day and other things that are there. So we put the letter there. And this is from some listeners and said the letter was and is a great start. We ended up making the letter an assertion and not a request. And we based it on just the Bible sites regarding, number one, God's temple and the clear penalty for those allowing it to be corrupted. You know, your body is a temple of God. And two, Revelation warning, citing regarding the mark of the beast system and what happens to those that take the mark and that worship its image. First draft had Gates and other admissions regarding mRNA. And had two pages, but we ended up avoiding those detailed admissions, and we avoided politics entirely in the final version. That's good. Keeping it to one page with about five good, relevant Bible footnotes. The response came back favorably in a few hours. A friend's that was denied was deemed to be generic. Again, if it doesn't have enough details, they might reject it because of that. That's the kind of decision that you have to make. I mean, I've had some people say, well, I'm going to do mine, and I'm going to make it, some people I know, so I'm going to make it very, very general. I'm just going to say, well, you know, I feel like God has told me that I shouldn't do this. End of story. You know, and you can't challenge that because God said that to me. But if they look at it and they think that it's generic, if they don't believe that there's, you know, I think you have to have some detail there to make it sincere. And as I've said, I think it's a good opportunity to share the gospel with people who are clearly setting in judgment of you, working against your religious liberty in some capacity. Perhaps they don't understand that. And if they do, maybe they'll be on your side. But anyway, I think, you know, you ought to always be ready to give an answer for the hope that is in you. And so I think it's an opportunity to say, and let me tell you why this should matter to you. Right? So without getting into politics, I mean, you could talk about the First Amendment and how foundational types of things like that, but you just stick on the religious aspect of it because that is what is protected by the First Amendment and many, many laws that have been placed in there to protect our religious freedom. So these orders that are being put out by corporations, these orders that are being put out by Biden and others, These are things that are not going to hold up in any honest court. They don't stand a chance in an honest court. So it's important to do that. You have a very strong case. They will then try to do other punishments, which then again brings us back into religious discrimination. If they're going to punish you because of that, that's another follow-through. Anyway, if you make it too generic, then they might reject it. And then they put a footnote there and said, our friend's denial was based wasn't based on your example, for your information. I just mentioned it because that seemed to be something that they're looking for. Now, this is from the individual who's in the military, who wrote that example, and we used it because it's got five different areas there that I thought were very good in terms of talking about how it violated his religious beliefs. He says, one of the NCOs I work with just informed me that his Air Force neighbor received an approved religious exemption for the jab. How about that? There's no word yet from the Army, but they'll most likely follow suit and not blanket deny like the Navy is doing. So we have the Navy that's just denied all religious exemptions, and their deadline has already passed pretty much. And so that affects the Navy and the Marines, I believe. The Army deadline is December the 15th. So the Navy deadline was November the 28th for sailors and Marines. The reservists have until December the 28th. The Army deadline is December the 15th. According to the Navy, only 6 permanent medical exemptions have been approved, and no religious waiver requests have been accepted at this time. Isn't that amazing? Perhaps it's just a coincidence that we see, as I played it, I think it was the week before I went on vacation, I played a clip from a guy who was talking about the hypersonic missiles. And he said, China doesn't need a hypersonic missile to take out a carrier group. They've really had the military capability to do that for the last 10 years. You know, we always, just as the beginning of World War II, battleships were the thing. Battleships were how they projected power. Battleships had been a key component in World War I. And it was a big blow to America's psyche when at Pearl Harbor, so many battleships were taken out. But what was not taken out were the aircraft carriers, because that was going to be the decisive naval asset of the Second World War. But, you know, that has now become, because that was such an important asset, we have a lot of them, a big investment in that. And, you know, for the last, 80 years, you've had people who have been focusing on how they can get rid of these carriers. And I know there's a lot of countermeasures to protect them that have been developed as they go along. But that military analyst said that he believes that they're vulnerable, even without a hypersonic missile. So when you stop and think about this, he said, imagine the impact that that's going to have on a nation if you were to have an aircraft carrier that were to get sunk. More than 6,000 people just on the carrier alone, not including all the different support ships around it to protect it. You know, you got this massive group of ships to protect that one asset that carries the airplanes that are going to project the power and so forth. But if they were to sink the carrier, he said, imagine the tragedy. That'd be more than twice as many people died on 9/11, and it would be a military defeat at the same time by a major military power. He said, think about the psychological effect it would have on the entire nation, because of the loss of life and because of the military defeat. And when I look at this and the fact that the Navy has now essentially turned its back on God and said, we're going to punish anybody with any religious convictions. You know what? I used to, when I was a kid, sometimes I'd stay up late and the TV would sign off. You know, you used to not have 1,000 channels 24/7. And when they would sign off, and at least in our area, they would sign off with the Navy hymn about God protecting those at sea. Perhaps the people at the Navy ought to pick up the Bible and read the book of Hosea and see what God does to nations that trash him, to nations that mock him, to nations that say he doesn't see what they're doing. Quite frankly, I look at the attitude of America in general, of the military in general, and specifically of the Navy, I'm afraid that God has drawn his bow. Time will tell. Perhaps so be merciful. Perhaps there are people who are praying for this, and it might be spared. But it is not a good policy. The people who founded this country, even Benjamin Franklin, said we have to understand that we would not be here today if we had not been protected by God. I read that. I'm paraphrasing it, but I read that to you for the Thanksgiving program. But what happens to the countries that thumb their nose at God? Well, we're seeing that all through Western civilization right now, and it's only going to get worse. According to the Navy, 96% of active duty sailors have been vaccinated. It means they're going to fire 4% of them. For the remainder, they could face transfers, travel restrictions, or it could end their career. Over 7,000 Marines are unvaccinated as the deadline hits and has already hit for them. Zero religious accommodation requests have been approved by the Navy. As the Epoch Times reported, it looks extremely concerning, and it's also problematic, said a lawyer who is representing some of them, adding that members who are separated after the religious exemption requests are turned down will likely have a strong case in court. And that's one of the reasons why I want to talk about the anthrax vaccine. Because, you see, it had a mandate. And there were situations where you had commanders who stood in the gap as people realized that this hasty, untested emergency use authorization vaccine was also very dangerous and refused to mandate it for people. And then you had a lot of people who were kicked out of the service and are still fighting that type of thing. But you had a judge who stopped it at that point in time. It was a different time in America, though. It's also a look to see what has happened to our country in terms of its corruption, in terms of the corporate control of our government as well. Not just the globalist control, it's multinational corporations, a big part of the global agenda. Some chaplains in Camp Pendleton cleared some of the applications as being legitimate, but those applications are sitting in Washington without being acted on. So the vaccine holdouts between the Navy and the Marines, reports MSN, hit 19,000 as the deadline passed. And that is probably on the low side, probably on the low side. Over 23,500 airmen and guardians say no to the COVID vaccines as the final deadline passes. Nearly twice as many guard and reserve airmen are unvaccinated than active duty component. It's 14,500 reservists and 8,800 active duty. And then as MSN reports, they have a quote from the Air Force Secretary who said in an online town hall November the 18th, quote, "Willfully disobeying a lawful order is incompatible with military service. And to get a vaccination is a lawful order." Is it? Is it? That's why I want to talk about the anthrax. And I have to say, are you willfully ignoring the Constitution, the Pentagon, and all these other people? Because it's not just for their own personal benefit that many of these people are doing it. It is because of their religious conviction. And it may be because their conviction to the oath that they took, that they are there to defend the Constitution, not just to use it as protection when they are attacked, but they're there to defend it. Going back to the anthrax situation, in November of 2002, the Journal Accounting Office said the military anthrax shots caused many reactions and prompted some pilots to quit. The Pentagon's mandatory anthrax shots caused adverse reactions in most recipients and helped to prompt many Air Force Reserve and Air National Guard members to transfer to other units or to leave the military between 1998 and 2000. The survey indicated that 85% of troops who received an anthrax shot had an adverse reaction, a rate that was far higher than the 30% claimed by the manufacturer in 2000. The DOD launched a program in 1998 to inoculate all troops against anthrax. The program was cut back to a few select units in 2000 because of the vaccine shortage due to the manufacturer's difficulty in getting FDA approval. See? A difference. You didn't have Trump saying, you do it today or you're fired. The survey was conducted in 2000 before the terrorists and anthrax attacks of September and October of 2001, which were tied in, by the way, as I've mentioned over and over again. They were tied directly to the first one of these simulations that they enacted this last year. They practiced this thing. They had the CIA, as I've pointed out, as RFK Jr. points out in his book, CIA intricately involved in all these, as was Gates, as was the NIH and the CDC, all the usual suspects, DARPA. They're all tied together with this. They did the first one 2 months before 9/11, the anthrax false flag attack, and it was a false flag attack, and the mainstream media even said the FBI did not properly investigate this. All that happened a week later, and then within 2 months, they had the model State Health Emergency Powers Act that they shipped out to get the states to enact laws to let them run a COVID dictatorship. So they could play this game that they played last year, saying, well, it's not the president, it's the states who are doing it, because the president doesn't have that authority, clearly, under the 9th and 10th Amendment. And but the president does have the duty to protect our constitutional rights. And the president was giving massive amounts of money to these governors who were destroying our constitutional rights and destroying Main Street businesses, and he should have pulled the money from them at the very least, if not taken them to court. They do it all the time. Over every other issue. Trump sat there. He was complicit in it, entirely complicit in it. Going back to 2002, that survey showed that 85%, is that it? Yeah. Had problems with it. They estimated that 37% of the aircrew personnel had received at least one anthrax shot of the 6-dose regimen. Anybody got a multi-dose vaccine, you better run the other way. By September of 2000, 85% of the vaccinees, people who had gotten the vaccine, I've never seen that before. 85% of the people who got the shot reported an adverse reaction. And each shot triggered an average of 4 or more subsequent reactions. Almost a fifth of the reactions were classified as systemic, and a fifth of these lasted for more than a week. So, in light of that, you have people still talking about this 20 years later. This article from Hill and Ponton. Did the anthrax vaccine make troops ill? Was it underlying the Gulf War syndrome? Was it and the whole, soup of vaccines that they require the military to get? Was that underlying all that? As I point out, and this goes back to December of 2020, in addition to being exposed to various environmental hazards and toxic chemicals, Gulf War veterans were also given a large number of vaccines, including vaccines for yellow fever, typhoid, cholera, hepatitis B, meningitis, whooping cough, polio, tetanus, and then, of course, anthrax. Despite concerns about its safety, the Department of Defense mandated that all military personnel be vaccinated with BioThrax. That's the brand name for it. Just like you got the Moderna's mRNA, they call it the spike vax, or Pfizer's thing, they call it Comirnaty, prior to development to Iraq or Afghanistan. Now, this lost in court, and it's kind of interesting, you go back and look at this, the judge who took this down was Judge Emmett G. Sullivan. Does that name sound familiar? Yeah, that was the judge in the Flynn case, But at this time, he did the right thing. He ruled that it was illegal for the federal government to mandate the anthrax vaccinations. Judge Sullivan banned the Pentagon from forcing military personnel serving in Iraq, Afghanistan, South Korea, and parts of Asia and Africa. He banned them from getting the anthrax shots without their consent. In September 2000, a lab test found trace amounts of squalene in certain BioThrax vaccines. The concentration was less than the typical amount found in human blood, but in a study of Gulf War veterans suffering from Gulf War syndrome conducted by Tulane University, 95% of the veterans had anti-squalene antibodies in their blood. The researchers updated their findings 2 years later, again testing the blood of veterans who experienced Gulf War syndromes. And the initial, the initial study found anti-squalene antibodies in 6 out of 6 of the service members who received the vaccine, the larger study that followed found it in about a third of vaccine recipients. So they first just did a small group, 6 people, 100% of them had it. Then when they did a large study, they found a third of them had it. They found that between 1998 and 2000, about 16% of air crew members and pilots either transferred to another unit, left the military, or moved to inactive status. About two-thirds of these service members cited the anthrax vaccine as a major factor in their decision. 27% ranked it as the most important factor over everything else. So your question is, after what we learned with this, why did the military do it again? Well, because this is a big plan. This is very, very important to them that they push this through. So the Journal of Ethics from the AMA, talking about health law, talks about informed consent in the military. And they talk about the anthrax case as an example of this. They said soon after this anthrax vaccination program was initiated, soldiers began complaining of side effects, many of which were debilitating to the point that some of them were unable to perform their duties. Some refused the vaccination, some were sanctioned or threatened with discharge or other punishment that could negatively affect their careers. Those who complained of side effects also faced discipline. That part of it hasn't changed. That's only gotten worse, hasn't it? Following complaints at Dover Air Force Base, Colonel Felix Greeter suspended the vaccination program and later said that the vaccines provided at the base contained squalene, a substance known to cause the side effects experienced by soldiers at Dover. Squalene was used to increase the effectiveness of the vaccine. In other words, it was an adjuvant, right? Just as they put in aluminum and other things in vaccines in the past in order to irritate your immune system to provoke a reaction, those adjuvants can also provoke unwanted actions and reactions by your immune system, creating autoimmune diseases and other things. So they used it as an adjuvant. Due to myriad problems cited by those vaccinated and the military's continued insistence that the vaccine was safe, the United States General Accounting Office, the GAO, performed its own survey of the National Guard and the Army Reserve members. So the Pentagon is saying, no, it's safe. We don't care. You have a colonel who stands in the gap and he says, not at my Air Force base. We're going to do it. The Pentagon insists this is the lesser magistrate protecting the people, doing the right thing. And because he resisted, you had the GAO look at it. The results of the GAO survey were consistent with a survey performed at the Air Force base. The rate of adverse events was significantly higher than what had been stated in the vaccine insert. You don't even have an insert for the COVID-19. Maybe they do now. They didn't for the longest time. So that brings up the question of what do you do to sue the military when they do the wrong thing? Because you had a lot of people 20 years ago injured by the anthrax vaccine and or facing consequences to their career. In general, it's difficult to sue any government entity, including the military, writes the AMA's legal branch here. One of the few paths for grievances is through the Federal Tort Claims Act. Let me repeat that for all you soldiers and sailors out there. The Federal Tort Claims Act, a limited exception to immunity. And we're talking about legal immunity for the government. So this penetrates the legal immunity to the government under some limited exceptions. Court decisions have further restricted the liability of the military. A number of lawsuits have been filed, however, seeking to protect the rights of service members. Since informed consent is not required for service members when treatment is approved by the FDA, this is why they fraudulently approved it, right? They couldn't force it on anybody until it was fraudulently approved. Now, that becomes a part of your court case, the fact that this was fraudulently done. The FDA violated all of its rules and protocols to approve this. None of them were followed. What they did was fraudulent and criminal in approving this. So Informed consent is not required for service members when the treatment is approved by FDA. That's what they're pushing through now. The primary argument was that the use of the anthrax vaccination was experimental. This legal theory also had the effect of bypassing limitations on the ability to sue the government. The military is constrained by law when seeking to require members to participate in an experimental treatment or use of the drug unapproved for its applied use. This is why the FDA approval is going to be a key part of any military troops who are trying to get compensation. We're talking about things like retirement and all the benefits. And if you get a dishonorable discharge, that's got a lot of other things that it blocks you from having. But I'm talking about the types of things that are supposed to be given to people who work for the military as part of the benefits package that they have reneged on. Just unbelievable. The criminality and the unethical behavior that we're seeing here. Troops who refuse the anthrax vaccine paid a high price. This came out this last summer. This was put out by Military Times. This is to intimidate people from looking at the anthrax vaccine, seeing the criminal behavior of the military, and saying, well, you know, we ought to push back. Well, you know what? This is what happened to those guys when they did it. They said the penalties range widely. Some kept on working. Others received non-judicial punishment, lost rank, lost pay, saw their careers ended, or even faced brig time and dishonorable discharges. Since then, an unknown fraction of those who were punished have sought to have their records corrected, but only a few have had success. Now, even more than 20 years later, some of those cases remain pending before the Military Court Corrections Board. So we shall see what happens with this. And I'm going to talk about some legal issues as soon as we come back. I'm going to talk about Roe v. Wade. Very important what is happening there, not only in terms of the sanctity of human life. And I know that's a phrase that you've heard for so long that it seems to have lost its meaning to a lot of people. Well, the sanctity of life has lost its meaning to people in America. And it's not just because they've heard a phrase mentioned over and over again. But it also has to do with the usurped power of the Supreme Court. And so I want to talk a little bit about what is really at stake here. A lot is at stake. Of course, a lot is at stake because of how many children die every year. I'll be back in just a second.
Common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. but each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com. Look at the VAERS database. Vaccine Impact points out that there's 2,809 dead babies in VAERS, mainly miscarriages. And this is from the Trump shot, the Trump juice, the Trump genetic code injection, whatever you want to call it. He loves it. Yeah, I'll talk about that here in a moment if I have time, because there's some new developments in that as well as in the election stuff. But when we look at that, understand that historically has been less than the number of babies aborted in a day by Planned Parenthood since we had the Roe v. Wade decision. They point out the latest dump into the VAERS database happened over the weekend, and there's now 927,740 cases of people who have been injured or killed from this for the past 11 months out of a total of 1,782,453. In other words, that 1.78 million, that's for 30 years. They've almost reached a million in just 11 months. The FDA approved vaccines have resulted in, over the last 30 years, on an average of 72 fetal deaths per year. The emergency use authorization Trump shots have resulted in 3,064 fetal deaths per year. Pregnant women were not specifically included in pre-authorization clinical trials, writes vaccineimpact.com. Larger than expected numbers of self-reported pregnant women have registered in the VAERS system. And of course, again, it's one of the reasons why you don't see most of the effects, because it's self-reported. The medical community does not like to report this. Larger than expected numbers of self-reported pregnant women. Miscarriage was the most frequently reported pregnancy-specific adverse event in VAERS. Again, this data is dependent on pregnant women self-reporting. And yet, the CDC and the FDA still continue to recommend the shots for pregnant women. It was only about 5 or 6 years ago that they warmed up to the idea that pregnant women should get any kind of shot. Prior to that, if you looked at the insert, it would always say for pregnant women not to get a shot. Then they didn't change the insert, but they started recommending pregnant women to get the shot, even though the insert said not to. Then they changed the insert. So even though a correct analysis of the original data shows that 82% to 91% of pregnant women will suffer miscarriages if their unborn child is less than 20 weeks old. Vaccine Impact says we've also have evidence that Pfizer knew about the risk to pregnant women in May of this year. A report that was published out of New Mexico based on a whistleblower who served on the COVID-19 task force had documents that Pfizer had submitted to the European Medicines Agency, the EMA, that's their FDA, to authorize the shots in Europe. And it included animal trials that showed that there were serious birth defects occurring in rats. But, of course, we treat our children worse than we do rats. We're all lab rats for Pfizer now. There was an increase of about twofold, in pre-implantation pregnancy loss and a very low incidence of mouth and jaw malformations, right-sided aortic arch and cervical vertebrae abnormalities, as well as a gastrointestinal situation where the intestines grow outside of the body. Right-sided aortic arch means that the heart has basically formed in the wrong direction. Why would that happen? I mean, if you're
If you're manipulating the messenger RNA, how could that possibly confuse the developing child? Yeah, exactly. So that brings us to Roe v. Wade, which, although this is a tragedy, 2,800 children who have been killed by this rushed, untested vaccine. We have, because of a Supreme Court decision, we've been losing about 3,000 children every day for 50 years. So the arguments that were heard about the middle of last week I thought were very interesting, and they have a lot of implications that have to do with what our government is going, how it's going to operate, and who is in charge here, who has the power in our government. Because we have, as I point out many times, judicial supremacy. We have, instead of a distributed system of checks and balances in the Constitution, what these people have gradually crafted over the years is a hierarchical system with Washington at the top and the Supreme Court at the top of Washington. And a key part of that is Roe v. Wade. To be able to go into something where they have absolutely no jurisdiction and to be able to make pronouncement, that is now has had consequences for a lot of different things, a lot of different things. And so, as AP News has been talking about, the left is apoplectic about this. The right is very optimistic. But again, you never know what these people are going to do. I mean, it looked like Obamacare was not going to go through. And Justice Roberts had already written the opinion saying that we have no authority for Obamacare. And so it was going to be a 5-4 decision against. At the very last minute, John Roberts wrote a changed his opinion, did a 180, and he wrote both the dissenting and the concurring opinion, whether he wrote both the minority and the majority opinions, and he switched sides at the last minute and said, no, we're going to call it a tax. So you never know what these people are going to do. Absolutely untrustworthy, as I said many times. It's a Forrest Gump system to give these people that kind of power over our lives. They're like a box of chocolate, and you never know what you're going to get. Kavanaugh, as AP is very upset about the fact that Kavanaugh, when he was running, told Susan Collins that he thought a woman's right to an abortion was, quote, settled law. He called the court cases affirming it precedent upon precedent that could not be casually overturned. Amy Barrett told senators, it's not the law of Amy, it's the law of the land. And I've mentioned that many times as a disqualifying thing. Whenever you hear one of these people say Roe v. Wade is the law of the land, they know better or should know better. They're judges. They know that there's a difference between a ruling and a law. They do not have the authority to amend the Constitution. They do not have the authority to make law. They have an opinion. And when they start making these sweeping pronouncements, and if you look at Roe v. Wade, and it was only about 4 or 5 years ago that I read it for the first time, and I was really surprised. The fact that it had absolutely no reference to the Constitution except in the preface. It said, well, you know, we all have our opinions and we all have ethical issues and religious issues about this, and we can look at what other countries are, but we need to look at the Constitution. And then they went on to cite all the traditions and laws and other places and, you know, what they thought was scientific evidence, and they never referred to the Constitution whatsoever in that. So anyway, The Washington Post writes, compromise appears to be elusive for this court as conservatives signal little interest in middle ground on abortion. We had some very interesting back and forth, and I think one of the most interesting things was what Sotomayor said. She warned of a stench that could surround the court. I was like, is that you? And Justice Stephen Breyer startled listeners when he said justices who contemplate overturning a watershed decision, as he called it, better be damn sure they can justify it. They understand that this is a very important precedent to them, just like Marbury versus Madison. I've said that many times. And when Amy Coney Barrett said that in her confirmation hearing, she said, well, we're not going to overturn Roe v. Wade. We might adjust some things around the edges, but, you know, the fundamental thing, that's there. That's law. And we, you know, that's important precedent. And I said, it's because it gives them so much power for other things. Wednesday's argument, quote, created the remarkable impression of a court at risk of disintegration, said a Harvard Law School professor whose name is Lazarus. We shall see if the Constitution can be resurrected, Lazarus. They know when they do this, if they do this, it's going to be huge. It's going to be a transformative moment in American politics, said another law professor at Washington University in St. Louis. So if they overturn Roe v. Wade from 1973, that wouldn't make abortion illegal in the United States, but it would revert the question back to each state legislature where it should be. That's where it should be. It should be determined by the states in the same way that the definition of marriage should be determined by the states and by the people. And the definition of marriage was determined by the states and by the people. We had state law. We had state constitutions. We had referendums to challenge that. And the people spoke in those referendums. And then the Supreme Court, based on the kind of power that they had usurped with Roe v. Wade, threw all that out. And so I think it will have perhaps some sweeping ramifications. I think for once, Sotomayor is correct about that. And I hope they do it for multiple reasons, certainly to protect innocent life, but it is also enslaving us as well. Roe v. Wade goes to the heart of our life and our liberty in this country. It's a very important issue. It is a landmark decision. It's not the law of the land. It's not the Constitution, but it is a landmark decision. Kavanaugh, in questioning, said, why should this court be the arbiter rather than Congress, rather than state legislatures, rather than state Supreme Courts, with the people being able to resolve this? That's exactly right. I'm actually surprised to hear one of them saying this. You say, wait a minute, you know, why should we make the decision? You've got Congress, you've got state legislatures, state Supreme Courts, and you've got the people. And that's what the Supreme Court has been doing. It's been ignoring all of those things ever since Roe v. Wade on many, many different issues. Whether you agree with them on these issues or not, that should concern you. We don't want to have a dictatorship of any sort by any group, but especially not by nine politically appointed, for life, unaccountable individuals. He goes on to say, and there will be different answers in Mississippi and New York. There'll be different answers in Alabama than in California. This Mississippi case, which is being argued there, is being argued by State Solicitor General Scott Stewart, and said, and the questions posed, she said that both Roe and Casey is a case that was where the Supreme Court reaffirmed, I believe it was 1992, they reaffirmed Roe v. Wade and that Casey. So she says, Roe and Casey, quote, haunt our country and have no basis in the Constitution. I'm sorry, not a she, but a he. He then compared those decisions to Plessy versus Ferguson, the Supreme Court decision from 1896 that justified official segregation before it was overruled by Brown versus the Board of Education 58 years later. He said, we're running on 50 years of Roe. It is an egregiously wrong decision that has inflicted tremendous damage on our country and will continue to do so and take innumerable human lives unless and until this court overrules it. Well, the only problem with that is, as I pointed out, you know, I've pointed out many different cases where the court has made bad decisions and subsequently reversed itself. You know, that was one of them. Plessy versus Ferguson. We also had the Dred Scott decision, said you got to bring back escaped slaves back to their plantation, capture them and take them back. And that was a Supreme Court decision. You had a Supreme Court decision that allowed that agreed with Andrew Jackson and said you can relocate the Cherokee, you know, from the mountains of North Carolina and Georgia to Oklahoma and put them on an Indian reservation. And then when they saw what it looked like, they immediately regretted that decision. And within 1 year, they reversed themselves, that same court. And then you had Andrew Jackson say, well, they've issued their opinion. Let's see them enforce it. And that's the key issue. He was right in the sense that they didn't have the ability to enforce that. You had a division of power. If there was a general disagreement with that, you could have had the third branch of government, the Congress, could have impeached him for that. But that's the way this is supposed to work. They're supposed to check each other and balance each other. And so although what he was doing was reprehensible, he legally had the power to do that. We've had situations where at the beginning of the introduction of movies, You had a movie that was not, should not have been controversial. It was called The Spirit of 76, and it was about the American Revolution. And yet it was done at a time that Woodrow Wilson was hoping that we would go into World War I on the side of Great Britain, and he didn't want anything that painted Great Britain in a negative light. And guess what? In 1776, Great Britain were the bad guys. So the federal government prohibited them, told the director, you can't do that. They shut it down in Chicago and censored it. Well, he got upset. He took it to California, and he put it back together again. He played it there. So then they arrested him. They fined him $10,000, which back in the, 17, I don't know when it was, but about that time frame. That was a lot of money, a lot of money. And they sentenced him to 10 years in jail. He appealed it to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said the First Amendment does not protect movies. Oh, people in Hollywood would be very interested to hear that, wouldn't they? That decision stood for about 30 years until it was reversed in the 1950s. So the Supreme Court is constantly making decisions that are being reversed. And so we shouldn't look at these decisions from previous courts and say, well, that's carved in stone. That's changed. That's become the law of the land. That is the they've modified the Constitution and so forth. Liberal Justice Stephen Breyer raised eyebrows by claiming that the, quote, country decided to resolve its differences by this court laying down a decision in Roe. That's not anything at all what happened. The country didn't decide that. The country had decided exactly the opposite in most of the states. This is the Supreme Court imposing its will, just as they did with gay marriage. When in fact, Roe represented judges taking the issue out of the country's hands. That's what's so interesting about the discussion going back and forth with Kavanaugh and the others. And this is an article that quote is from LifeSite News. So Sotomayor, in talking about this, was the most aggressively pro-abortion in her questioning, says LifeSite News, at points falsely claiming that the beginning of human life is primarily, quote, a religious view, and dismissing the evidence for fetal pain as fringe. And she questioned whether the court could overcome the stench of an anti-Roe outcome, making the court seem to be political. You can't make this stuff up. These people, who would think that the Supreme Court was politically based, right? To which Stewart responded that the best defense against such a perception would be to simply ensure that the ruling is grounded in legal and factual merits. But most tellingly, and this is the key point, listen to this. First you heard liberal Stephen Breyer say, well, you know, the country decided to resolve its difference by letting the Supreme Court decide for everybody. That's exactly the opposite of what happened. But this is what Sotomayor says. She tacitly conceded that Roe is not rooted in the actual text of the Constitution, writes LifeSite News, something that has been conceded by many pro-abortion legal scholars. She tacitly conceded that by questioning whether or not a reversal would jeopardize other precedents. She said, there's so much that's not in the Constitution that we do, right? That's right. That's exactly the problem with the Supreme Court. There's so much in the Constitution that they do. And that's why this has big impact, not just for 3,000 lives a day. That's big enough. I think about that. A 9/11 every day of innocent babies. It's just amazing that God hasn't destroyed this country. And then we have people like Fauci who have harvested babies, deliberately premeditated murder, cutting them apart while they're alive, to get their organs. And then what do they do with the organs? They use them to create humanized mice. I mean, this is just evil on top of evil on top of evil. These people are just building a mountain of wrath upon themselves. Samuel Alito said the viability, making a viability line, drawing a line saying it's 20 weeks, it's 15 weeks, it's whatever. He says that doesn't make any sense as a legal standard because it's constantly changing as medicine advances. And so he pressed them on the notion that an egregiously wrong precedent cannot be overturned unless the facts change or a new argument is made. So again, Kavanaugh stressed that the Constitution is silent on abortion and that overturning Roe would simply return to the states the ability to debate and to decide their own abortion law. This is simple. This is the Ninth and Tenth Amendment. If you don't have the power explicitly in the Constitution, you don't have that power. And that's especially true of the judiciary. They're supposed to be referees, not legislators. The key thing is that you have Barrett, in terms of her questioning, she actually took on Planned Parenthood. She said, you say this is about parenthood. It's not about parenthood. It's not about parenthood at all. This is just about a pregnancy. We also have adoption, she said. Very key. We'll have to see what happens with that. Well, thank you for listening. We're out of time. I'll pick up on the rest of this tomorrow. Thank you.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.